Oh, thank you so much, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Wednesday, and it's us. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Are you as disappointed in the Black? How can you not be disappointed? I already know the answer to my own question, but now it's starting to look a little dangerous. Agreed?
It looks a little bleak, but I hate to be the fan that gives up on the team.
Right.
I really do.
Right. Right. I am more disappointed in Andrew Shaw than I am about the Blackhawks right now. Because I love that guy. I love how scrappy he is. I love that he's willing to take on a guy who could have 5 or 6 inches on him and 35 pounds. He just doesn't seem to care. This guy, just all he wants to do is win. And he apparently may have said some things yesterday, incredibly derogatory, a gay slur. And that is disappointing to me because he's smarter than that.
He is smarter than that, but he lost control is what it is. And when you lose control, you say things you don't mean.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
I can understand when they said, "What did you say?" I can understand when you're just yelling stuff and you're so mad you don't remember what you said.
That's what he claims. They asked him if he said these things, and he says that. But still, you have to, and I know it's hard to have that filter, but you have to realize that you're representing the team and you're representing the city and you're representing good sportsmanship.
You're not thinking of that
in the heat
of passion.
I find that extremely disappointing. You know, and I understand the competitiveness because I'm overly competitive, but I also know that in the heat of the moment, I mean, I've never played in a Stanley Cup playoff, but I do know what it's like to have the pressure of a game on you, and you just go, well, I'm just going to say what's on my mind, but you can't. If he said what they're alleging he said, that's too far, you know.
I don't like, you know, that word is in one of his go-to words.
Right.
I don't like that.
Right. That's
allegedly.
That's upsetting.
But you're not a swearing person, so when you get mad, I've really only heard you swear like a handful of times in the 20-some years I've known you.
And
maybe twice, and they were both directed towards me.
Right.
Right. One of them was for sure.
Right.
But I don't hear you swear that often. As someone who swears on a pretty regular basis, there are times that I say things, and somebody will say, "Do you know what you just said?" And it's like, I have no idea.
You didn't even know. I don't know how somebody, you do swear a lot. I don't know how somebody who swears as often as you can turn it off on the radio. That amazes me.
Can I tell you, we were out with some friends on Saturday night, and a lot of my friends I've known since sixth grade. One of my friends I met in high school is dating a guy I've known since sixth grade.
Yeah.
And my husband, Jim, said to him, "Steve, so give me some stories. What was Wendy like back then?" Because I had slipped out maybe something, an F word. And they all kind of laughed and, you know.
Focaccia?
Yes. Yes, we were at an Italian place. Very good. Thank you, Steve. And somebody said, "How in the world can you not swear on the air when it's..." And God love Jimmy Mack. He comes to my defense. This is what he used with the kids, too. It's like she has to hold it together all day in front of a microphone.
Yeah.
So when she's off the mic, the filters are off, and it tends to come a little more frequently. And then Jim says to Steve, "Hey, tell me what Wendy was like in sixth grade." And this poor kid just goes, "Wendy's always been Wendy."
Yeah.
And left it at that.
Right. That's the way, I think that's the best description there. I get that.
But
how do you trick your brain into understanding the difference?
Because there's a big-ass microphone in front of me.
All right, I think we just proved our point accidentally.
Oopsie.
No, I can say that. I have been on the air for 30 years. I know I turn into professional mode. I know if you listen, you'll wonder what that is.
All right, so you know in the back of your head while you're on the air, you know that there are 7 to 10 words that you should not, could not, better not say.
Even though those words are not listed individually in any kind of handbook, it's just George Carlin made them popular.
But his original 7 words you can't say, you just said one of them. You can say 2 or 3 of them now.
I think ass is okay. I think it can't be preceded by something.
It can't be part of a bigger picture.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I know the words. You know what? This is my life, so I would never jeopardize that. And there's a nice dump button.
But I don't know how you're able to, like, just during the course of the day,
I'm in
separate.
Professional mode.
Wow. I wouldn't be able to do it.
Women can multitask. And you know what? Broadcasters can multitask. There are a lot of people. In fact, you're one of the few people I know in broadcasting who does not swear.
Right.
Because if you listen to any outtakes of when you're doing like pre-recorded commercials or any kind of tape thing, there are reels and reels of people in this town that have said some pretty funny things.
Right.
People and now with the internet, we can play them.
Yes, we could. Yes, we could.
You don't get into, like, when you play tennis, you go into game mode.
Yeah, but I understand that, but I just, like, you swear a lot, right? Agree? Do you agree? I mean, you swear more than anybody else I know. You do.
Okay.
I don't know anybody. I've never met anyone who swears as often as you, ever. But I don't know
how
you're able to not.
At all.
Who do you think I know that swears as much as you? I don't know anybody who swears as much as you.
I just love when he keeps saying it. One more time.
I don't know a single human being. I have never met a single person who swears as often as you do. I don't know anybody who comes close.
And you don't know many people.
That was a two.
For whatever it's worth, I don't think you're that out of control, Wendy.
It's not out of
control. I've heard people swear more than you.
What do they do for a living?
Anything, everything.
I'm just confused, because my point is, considering you do this for a living, I am amazed.
I don't do it on the air.
But that's the part that amazes me, is that you're able to separate it effortlessly.
He's actually praising you
right now.
This
is a compliment.
Yeah,
really, he doesn't know anyone who swears more than me.
I don't. I don't know.
You don't know any sailors?
I know swailers who have said to me, how do you work with Wendy? I could never swear that often.
Whatever.
It would make me dizzy.
Wendy, are you telling me you're not a sailor?
I don't mean this. I'm not slamming you. I am amazed.
I find that
you're
hard
able,
to believe.
I am.
With all the dirty comics you've worked with over the years, that hurts me.
They're all included. And I'm including construction workers and Vikings. I'm including Vikings in this.
Andrew Shaw and I are going out to lunch today.
I don't hold that same opinion of you, Wendy.
Steve knows people who swear way more than you.
I do. But I'm.
But he travels in more dangerous circles than I do.
And I'm almost only on with you on the air. So.
Right.
I don't hear you.
We'll take a quick break.
Yeah, I don't even know what we're talking about. The Hawks?
It was Andrew Shaw.
Oh.
Who even said to me one time, boy,
shut
she
up.
Swears a lot, that Wendy. All right, a break and then more show, Bill and WGN.
You know, there was just an article that said people who swear are more intelligent than people who don't. I can find that for you if you'd
like. That is. I know that is true.
No, you're being
I know our greatest thinkers.
Patronizing.
I know Einstein used to swear all the time. Stephen Hawking swears all the time. LL Cool J, big time swearer.
He's intelligent.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Can you spell LL Cool J?
I can. This is a hot breaking story. We were going to talk about this at some point anyway today, but now there's been a new development. They announced yesterday that Michael Strahan, who is the Michael half of Live with Kelly and Michael, is leaving the show.
I don't know how he got on the show.
You're not the only one who wonders that.
I mean, I will. To be fair, I have never watched it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Since Regis left.
When Regis was on it, I thought the dynamic of the show, especially when it was Regis and Kathy Lee, I enjoyed it a lot then.
It was crazy.
Because they did not like each other. They are both nuts, and they did not get along. And that was very apparent on the show.
I didn't watch it enough to know that, really.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that either. I used to watch it.
They did not get along.
I did not say that.
Seriously?
Yeah. So
okay. Bill used to watch The View.
I did for many years. Then they replaced her with Kelly Ripa, who at that point was best known for All My Children.
I didn't like her at first. She kind of bugged me, and she was too chirpy, and I really got to like her a lot.
Yeah.
I think she's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
She's great at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
She just, it was hard to recreate that dynamic.
True.
And they were able to, a different dynamic, I guess, but they did a good job together.
You know what's funny is when it was her and Regis, when it was Kelly Ripa and Regis, the show seemed real. And then when Michael came on board, it became fake show businessy. You know, everything was it seemed fake to me. Anytime I watched it, it didn't have that element of, wow, here's just two people and then three or four when the guests would come out just talking about things. It seemed too staged and fakey to me. People liked him. They did this extensive search for a co-host before he was named the co-host. And there were a lot of people that came in and did a really good job. And I thought, I don't think it's going to be Michael Strahan. So he shocked me. But he got the job and people liked him. Well, now he announced yesterday he's leaving the show. He's going to go and be a part of Good Morning America.
Which he's been doing a couple days a week already. So.
He's been doing in a little fill-in work with them, and they're happy with him. And apparently he wanted to leave the show. Well, now word comes out, Kelly Ripa was, and I use the word blindsided because that's how it's being described in nearly every story. She didn't know this was coming. She didn't know that her partner was leaving. She was told, and then they went on the air and announced it, and she was not too happy. Well, today, Kelly Ripa did not show up for work.
Well, that's a mistake.
I think it's a mistake, too.
I mean, in a way, I understand, because if you're angling to get a better job, you don't share information with someone until you for sure land that other job.
Yeah.
However...
Yeah. You want to prepare them in case...
Exactly. Yeah. Like, when it was a done deal, I think he owed her the right to say, Kelly, can we go out for coffee or something? Because I got to talk to you.
Well, in the accounts I've read, and I agree with you, in the accounts I read, all this has come together within a week. That this is all, he put out word that he really wants to leave the show and do something else. Good Morning America found a way to make him a more constant member of the show.
But what's he going to do? Isn't he going to be doing kind of the same thing, or it's not as full time as this?
It's not as full time. He'll just.
What else does he have to do?
Oh, he's remarkably
all over the place.
Busy.
Is he really?
He does NFL. Yeah, he does NFL analysis. He does pre and post game shows.
Has he always been doing that?
I don't know how long he's been doing it, but it's been increasing. You know, he's been doing more and more of it. And he's actually, I have to say this for him, he's really pretty good at that. You know, he sits on the panel with other former NFL players and they kind of dissect
the game.
Well, that's
his territory.
That is absolutely his territory. And he did come kind of a long way with the celebrity interviews. It just had a weird, fakey quality as compared to when it was her and Regis. But now she is MIA as of today. Kelly Ripa, it says here, this is according to Huffington Post, was a no-show on Live with Kelly and Michael. And they might want to change that name because pretty soon both Kelly and Michael will
not
be.
It's not going to work. Just no. Live.
Right. Right. Go back to Regis and Kathy Lee. Live with Regis and Kathy Lee.
Well, let's get a demo in. Let's you and I apply
right.
for that.
I would do that. Well, there's a bunch of lists. We don't have time to do it now, but there's a bunch of potential replacements for Michael Strahan because this is seriously one of the most coveted jobs in talk television is to be on that show.
Wasn't Pat Tomasulo one of the guys who sat in a couple days?
I can't remember if Pat did or not. Did he? Was
he
one
so.
Of them?
Yeah, so. I think he was one.
Oh, I didn't know that. That'd be interesting.
Well, maybe
that would be. That would
I wonder
be nice
if he's
for him.
Told Robin and Larry.
Oh,
and
maybe
Larry.
Paul.
We got to have coffee.
But do you know what I mean? If you're working out a deal, you don't want to blab before it's a done deal, because
right.
you could. Screw the deal up.
That's true. That's very true.
But he did, in my opinion, owe it to her as an on-air partner to say, hey, listen, we got to talk.
There's something coming up. I don't think he or anyone else expected this to all happen within a week.
There's still enough time to tell her.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know, you know, I hate when people go, oh, timing, you know. I'm a blurter, so sorry about that. Sometimes I say things when it's not the right time. But it's better to get it out than, you know, like I don't want to tell her before the show starts.
Right.
But you still, he had
right.
time to tell her.
Well,
if he had time to sign the contract.
Right. It doesn't take a whole lot longer. So Anna Gasteyer filled in this morning for Kelly Ripa. They don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, if she'll come back to work or not. But it sounds pretty heated over there.
Dumb move of her not to show
I'm shocked because she seems more professional than
that. Yeah, you know what? Show must go on.
Yeah.
Make a joke
senior,
about it.
Senior skip day. It's the springtime.
Is that what it is?
Maybe
is it co-host it skip day?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Rip a skip day.
That's what it is. All right. We'll take a break. Steve has the news. Did you know that it is Poetry Month? April is National Poetry Month. We'll have a poet in studio. That's coming up in a little bit. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Poetry. We've all written poems.
Sure.
And we got a letter in the mail, snail mail, saying April is National Poetry Month, a big deal when you make your living as a poet. So we have a real, honest-to-goodness poet in the studio with us right now, Bill Baczynski. Hi, Bill.
Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Did you choose snail mail because it rhymes? Is that why?
Absolutely.
Is that your choice? Good
Absolutely.
Move.
In honor of April being National Poetry Month, Bill, I have written you a little poem if I may.
I would love it.
There once was a man named Baczynski who really enjoyed a cheese blintz. See?
Oh, that's a good start.
That's great.
That's all I have, though.
That's great.
You're not
very
leaving,
zen.
Right, Bill? You're going to
like
stay.
Zen Cohen. It's beautiful.
I always liked writing poems, though. And you think of younger kids, they go through poetry in elementary school and stuff. It's fun to write a poem.
The wordplay is kind of the thing that I stress. You know, it's crazy. You know, it's been associated with sophistication and kind of, you know, is esoteric to a lot of people. But I kind of celebrate the Walt Whitman-esque democratic vision of poetry for the every person.
Don't you think as a kid when you're subjected to like Dr. Seuss or Shel Silverstein or somebody like that, it really does set a nice tone for the rest of your life to be interested in that sort of writing?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a good point. That's what we're first introduced to. Yeah. No wonder it we like to do
yeah.
it.
And I try to tie some strings from Uncle Shel and Dr. Seuss to the, you know, the more established and classic poets. But Dr. Seuss is where we cut our teeth. You know,
yeah.
Dr. Seuss, no mother goose, put a hat on a cat and let it loose. Mm-hmm. Ears on Horton. Horton heard a who. Caused a whole bunch of trouble in Salah Salou.
Do you only go iambic pentameter or do you stray every once in a while?
I stray a little bit. Being from New York, actually, I stray a lot, you know.
Because it upsets people when you hear poetry, you go, well, it must rhyme. Poetry has to rhyme, but not really.
Absolutely not. And that's why I liked your piece. Very, very catching, you know.
Well, Baczynski, it's hard to find stuff to rhyme with.
You got
to
go back to the old Polish.
When you tell mom and dad that this is going to be your lot in life to be a poet, their reaction is what?
Well, my dad was a New York City cop, and his first response was, no money in that.
With the hands?
No money in that. The truth is I've made a good living for 20 years selling myself as a teacher, a poet, and a performer. I mean, this is not your grandmother's poetry.
Yeah.
As sweet as your grandma was. And, you know,
mine wasn't
Matilda
that sweet.
She was for you. But it's, you know, it's kind of poetry for the average person. I'm very interested in, like, turning them on.
Yeah.
Whatever is going to turn them on. If in the sports, you know, you evoke a sports metaphor. You're a hard hit drive up the middle down the line. You know, 1,000-watt bulb burning all the time.
Mm.
You know, lighting up the scoreboard with a head first slide. Hard hit drive up the middle down the line. That was for the Cubs right there.
When you're hearing that, you can't help but react to it because it's got such a nice smooth flow to it all.
Right. And the fact that I don't read it, you know, I work in the bardic tradition where, you know, I'm a bit of a performer. Although everything I learned about performing was in the classroom, actually, as a teacher.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't really take any acting classes. But I'm good. You should see my shtick.
Yeah, I'm sure of it.
Do you have a YouTube channel or something?
You know, I've got a lot on YouTube, actually. I got this little thing called Poetic Chicago, which is a kind of a feature of all the places that are poetic in Chicago. You know, places like the Trapeze School. You know, so a poetic
I don't know
Chicago.
About the Trapeze School.
Yeah, nobody knows. It's right on the lakefront. And so I did this little piece. If you go to my website, poeticclassroom.com, you can see a piece called Poetic Chicago. It's about, you know, a 10-minute little blip. And again, you know, celebrating the poetry of people like to swing on a trapeze on the lakeshore.
Do you have to train your mind, Bill, to see things in a poetic light, or does it just come naturally? How does somebody...
Well,
get
you know, I
that.
Cut my teeth on the singer-songwriters of the 70s, Dylan, Tom Waits. And so in one way, yes, because, you know, I've been imbibing it for a while. But I think anything good, meaningful, powerful is going to be cultivated.
Right.
So, you know, I cultivate it. I read all the, you know, the classics and try to get inspired so that I can inspire.
That's so cool. And my 16-year-old son is a musician, and he's mainly covering Bob Dylan and Donovan and all these older classic rock tunes. And he's written 3 songs, and when he played the songs, I was blown away.
It blows you away, right?
I mean, really, yeah. It's really a beautiful thing, and that's where poetry kind of happened. You know, aside from the Walt Whitman and the Carl Sandburg, the musicians.
No, without a doubt. In fact, you know, my mantra is we may not all be poets, but everybody has poetry. So again, if it's an athlete, I try to stress the, you know, the playfulness within that language, and the musicians are, you know, our modern poets.
Isn't
sure.
that the funniest thing,
yes.
though? Because if you ask a person if they like poetry, and they're like,
they hate it,
it's
right?
okay. Do you like music? I love music. Yeah. Then you kind of like poetry, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baudelaire, a French poet, said, a man can live for 2 days without bread and water, but not a day without poetry.
Oh, wow.
And I think there's some truth to that, you know. And again, you know, I say we may not all be poets, but everybody has poetry. And I kind of, you know, stress the fact that it's really a power. It's not just fancy words on a page. And it's to cultivate that power, to read it and to write it, is to see the world imaginatively, I think, and to express yourself uniquely,
right,
which is what your son's doing, Wendy.
I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he's a bright kid, so it didn't surprise me that he would get into songwriting. But I don't know, I'm kind of critical sometimes, and it's like when I heard it performed, it's like, you really wrote that? It's amazing. We have Bill Baczynski in the studio, poet, performer, and teacher, and we're celebrating April because it's National Poetry Month. Now, you do shows. You definitely have your website, poeticclassroom.com. Where can we see you perform?
You know, National Poetry Month, the spring, is my busiest time. I'm out every day and night.
Doing what? I'm sorry, I didn't even know it was National Poetry Month.
Yeah, well, you know, I do a good business among the schools, so I do assemblies, a lot of writing workshops, but I perform in bars. I do a lot at churches. One of my degrees is actually from a seminary, although I have my English degree and a business degree, if you can imagine all three of those, you know, coming together to
what
form
couldn't
a poet.
Decide what you wanted to be.
I'm a little slow. That's why I send the snail mail.
When you say you do it in bars, I've not experienced this firsthand, but I know such a thing exists where they do beat poetry, where people go up and they read poems and people just kind of move their, they snap their fingers and stuff. Is that a common thing now? Is that big and popular still?
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, I'm really trying to avoid that cliche.
Oh,
and
yeah?
If a beatnik shows up, you know, I'm going to snap my fingers. But
yeah, because mostly in some of the
right.
poetry slams and stuff, are they still snapping?
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, I have a band, you know, I carry
yeah.
a band with me. I got some good musicians that do my, you know, do some stuff. So
that's
we got
excellent.
Shtick, you know.
Good.
In fact, I got a radio program, again, online, you know, Radio Poetry.
Yeah.
Broadcast live from the basement of the Turtleneck Cafe. Just take the Whoop-De-Doo Highway to the Jack Kerouac exit, hang a left on Beatnik Boulevard, and you're there.
You should stick around because coming up later today, we're going to talk to Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley, of course, One Toke Over the Line, a song that came out in the 60s, and we know a lot of the words to that
right.
song. Today is 420, so you guys might click. Although he's on the phone, I don't know if we can hook you guys up.
That's
yeah.
the problem.
That's a problem.
Let's talk more. It's National Poetry Month, and Bill Baczynski is here. You want to go to poeticclassroom.com for more information. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Little Bobby Dylan, Robert Zimmerman, he was quite the poet, I will say that.
Well, here's the thing. Bill Baczynski is here. It is National Poetry Month, and he is an actual live working poet, doing fine in that career. There are certain people, Bob Dylan is one of them, who are not poets per se, but just their delivery and their word choice. George Carlin was a poet, don't you think? Richard Pryor was a poet. Guys who do, our friend is Doc Emmerich, who does Blackhawk games on NBC. And just the way he describes things is poetic to me. You can be any of those things and be a poet, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think you guys could do this gig if you didn't have you know, a poetic spirit and some poetry flowing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Poetry in motion, as Thomas Dolby once said.
He was right. Thomas Dolby knew.
All right, we were talking to Bill Baczynski off the air, and Bill, you're just a listener who sent us a letter who said, you know what, April is National Poetry Month, and I want to come in and share poetry and the love of poetry. And so you've been a teacher, and you have had some training in seminary school. Another poet, Jim Morrison, when I was back in seminary school, I petitioned the Lord.
That counts.
I just did some poetry.
Yep.
And it's all kind of coming together. You perform, and if you'd like to find your schedule, it's all up at poeticclassroom.com.
Yeah.
Okay. So you said you do bars, restaurants. You're doing a gig at a country club of one of the a student that you had a long while ago.
Right.
Tell us
right.
about that, because this is beautiful.
Well, you know, I do a lot of business on the North Shore, where they do appreciate, you know, their poetry. And this little girl had some, you know, some issues and has just succeeded beyond everybody's wildest dreams. And I was fortunate enough just to give her a little vision as a little, you know, as a little
in first
kid.
Grade.
Yeah, in first grade. You
so
know?
Now she's graduating
yeah,
from college,
yeah.
and her parents want you to come speak at this little get together.
Yeah,
look
no,
at that. You
although
made a
as
difference.
A teacher, you always get those old timers coming.
Oh,
back,
sure.
You know? So I got a lot of those little, you know, neophytes, and
that's
got
to make you feel really good, though, right? After
yeah.
just watching them blossom that way, that's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you're doing some work at a hospital regularly, a weekly thing.
And have for a couple of years now, Wendy, actually. Poetry, you know, it's therapeutic power in the hospital setting. All these kids have lost somebody in their family has died, sometimes very tragically. I mean, murders. This is down in Evergreen Park, and usually about 7-8 sessions in the spring and the fall. Sometimes the poems they create are elegies, a tribute to the loved one. Sometimes it's an emotional sort of wrestling with the problems. It's always some sort of ministry. A poem I like to give in that context, and you know, if any of the listeners are struggling, I'm a big believer in the efficacy of poetry to heal as well as just writing it. But there's a story of this old Zen poet, Royakin, who came home one night and discovered a thief broke into his house, sat down in the middle of the rubble, and wrote this poem. He said, "The thief left it behind, the moon in my window. The thief left it behind, the moon in my window." You know, and just a short turn of the phrase, you know.
Yeah.
A balm, some medicine. And I think poetry is a vitamin, essential to the nutrition. Make sure you take one every day and do not ever miss one. A poem is a vitamin. Without a word of verse, you're sure to get run down and soon to need the nurse. A poem, it's a vitamin. Just pop them in your mouth. Open wide. Now say, ah, you'll be the picture of perfect health.
Do you have a big old loose leaf binder somewhere with all these poems, or is it all up in your brain?
You know, John Milton wrote in his head. He was blind later, and he had an amanuensis that would write down the stuff. And I don't even think it's going to be a good poem until I've got a good bit of it in my head.
Really?
I'm one of those hyperactive kids, you know. I didn't really perform well in school. I was a C, B-minus student all the way into college.
But no dummy.
No, no.
Just grade-wise, right. It didn't translate.
Right, and
you.
But when I'm ready to write, I want to move. I'm walking, I'm hiking, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of my jabs, there's kind of this, I jab at the media a good bit, you know, and I got this faux radio station called Radio Poetry, and I try to let kids know that, you know, poetry is coming through the airwaves in lots of ways, the commercials. So I've got these faux commercials that I sort of send out. One of my sponsors of my radio show is Muss It Up. It's a way of messing up. Without giving up your style. Friends, don't moose it up. Just loosen up with Muss It Up. Get rid of the spray. Get rid of the gel. Tell your hairdresser. Go straight to mussitup.com.
You are a hep cat. Can I tell you that? You really are. And his name is Bill Baczynski. It's a pleasure to talk to you. You're doing a lot of good with your poetry, and you're growing within yourself as well. You can go to poeticclassroom.com and find out any of Bill's performances. There's some YouTube videos there as well. I understand you wrote a poem about us.
Well, I have one for each of you.
Oh, you did.
That would be appropriate.
That's so nice.
This is one.
Does mine contain swearing? Because am the person that Bill has met that swears more than anyone he's ever met in his life.
Well, had I known that, I would have peppered this with some off-color.
The word Nantucket would have to
But
come
all
up
I remembered
was
seeing you through the window there and those eyes. So I wrote this poem called Wendy. It goes like this. Who would you shine if you were a sun, and what kind of tune would you croon? If you were a moon who could croon a tune and fill a midnight party with fun, and if you on a star could fly a balloon across Chicago's sky, sunshine, I say, we'll have a new day with the sparkle in Wendy's eyes.
That's beautiful.
Really good.
Sorry,
that's
can't
really
see those
good.
Eyes here, friends.
Thank you. Now, Bill's
Well,
home.
Bill, my namesake, you know, strong and determined, William. This is a poem for Bill. It goes like this. His flimsies and his whimsies wrote a song together, and they sang it to the muse. And in a tick-tock, he went click-clock, and time took him back to the sock hop, where his jazz was fine, and the rhythm in his poetry will blow your mind. And yes, friends, he has held time in a bottle. He's seen the cat in the cradle, a silver spoon. His papa was a rolling stone, but it doesn't mean he was born to lose. His jazz is fine, and the rhythm in his poetry is going to blow your mind.
That's
nice. Awesome.
Bill,
and
this
you
is
really
you did a nice
captured
job.
Us. Well, Bill, anyway, I'm not so sunny.
Come on. That's wonderful stuff. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to meet you, and really keep poetry alive, because, Bill, you hit the nail on the head when you say, oh, are you into poetry to people? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Well, do you like music? And there is poetry in everything, so thank you for sharing that
Thanks
with us.
Thanks for having me. A real pleasure.
Bill Baczynski, and Baczynski's kind of tough to spell, so just go to poeticclassroom.com. You sure you can't come up with another couple of lines? There once was a man named Baczynski who really enjoyed a cheese blintz, see? Say.
It gets tough after that, Bill. You got to admit.
No, I had to raise my game for
it,
that.
It gets tough after that.
Thanks so much, Bill.
A pleasure, guys.
News is next, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, he's back in action, and every time he's in the studio, people want to talk to him. Highly sought after in many ways. Clinical psychologist, his name is Dr. John Duffy. Your book, The Available Parent, is fantastic. Thanks for coming back with us today.
Thanks for having me back. Glad
John,
to be here.
One of the things you want to discuss with us today is co-parenting and the way that sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes one parent will see a certain way of doing things with the kids where the other parent might want to do things slightly differently.
Exactly. Huh? Yeah. And it's an interesting thing because a lot of couples judge themselves pretty harshly about this. Like, we should be on the same page.
Yeah.
Some wise comedian somewhere way back when said, if the two of you think alike, one of you is unnecessary.
So, that's kind of true, though.
It's pretty clever, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably true in parenting as well, that it's not a bad thing for kids to adapt to different styles as long as they aren't clashing and as long as it's not like one parent sabotaging another. You know, the thing that concerns me maybe a lot about this is when there's a vibe where mom might say, well, we'll do this, but don't tell dad about it, or vice versa. You know what I mean? And I think that puts kids in kind of an odd, anxious position, you know?
And it puts the kids in control.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
worse.
You know, it's like they'll work both angles. And I have to confess, being younger, you know, we did that as kids sometimes. It's like if mom said no, you'd ask dad.
Right. Right. And a lot of parents lament that, like, you know, well, they're manipulating us. And my thought is, well, any self-respecting kid, if they see that there's a weak spot there, they're going to go for the weak link, right? You know,
right.
If I can get curfew half an hour later with mom, I'm going with mom. You know, there's a skill woven in there as well.
Yeah.
With me, it was my mom and my sister. My mom would give me a curfew, and my sister would go, don't you think that's too late? She's an older sister, and now I love her. But boy, for a while, I got mad at her.
Well, and some of us do have more than two parents in a lot of ways, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right.
Do parents sometimes play a game of good cop, bad cop when it comes to kids? They do, don't they?
All the time. All the time. And I'm not altogether against it unless there's always this one bad cop. You know what I mean? And then good cop kind of sabotages bad cop's, you know, intentions and connections. And so I think the more balance there is between kind of discipline and connection between mom and dad, the better.
Right.
If somebody's always the heavy, they're going to be avoided. There's going to be this kind of narrative that's drawn that suggests like, I don't like that parent.
Right.
And that isn't useful in the family, creates a lot of strife. But yes, that happens all the time in most every family.
Sure.
Yeah.
And something Dr. Duffy has taught me is I'm someone who threatens, but I have no follow through in many aspects of my life. But I am a threatener.
Right.
And there are a lot of parents like that. And the kids know that they're not going to follow through. And John has said, you know what? Follow through this time, and it does kind of change things up quite a bit. Leave them guessing is what I guess you should do.
And if you make a promise to them, like, you know, hey, listen, if you do this, you're going to lose your phone for X number of hours. Then do that. Even if it creates dissent between you, at least they know what's coming, and that predictability helps in a lot of ways. You know,
and you know, this is something, you know, I could read every. I didn't know much about parenting until I became a parent, and I'm still learning something every day. So The Available Parent helps a lot. And I've read a lot of things, too, where I completely lost my thought.
Oh.
First one would be take your ADHD meds.
Maybe.
Before you go on the air. But you have to have the follow through. I really completely forgot my thoughts, so I'll get back to it.
John, what about this? This was the situation when I was growing up with my brother and I. We always liked it better if my mom would just issue a punishment right then and there, because her alternative would she would say sometimes, you know what, why don't you guys just sit down in your rooms and we'll let your father deal with this when he gets home. Now, he wasn't any more tough on us, but it was just the idea that we'd have to wait before we got our sentencing. That's what we were so nervous about.
The waiting's the hardest part because you don't know what's going to happen.
I remember purgatory. I know exactly what you're talking about, and that wait till your father gets home. Even if dad wasn't the scarier parent, it's just, you know, there is this deterrent, like, oh boy, the waiting, you know, sitting there, we're dead, you know?
Right.
One thing I find with kids today is, a generation ago, I think we were afraid. We were afraid of our mom and dad, maybe dad in particular. Kids today are real savvy. And they're, not only are they not afraid, but I've had kids say to their parents in my presence, well, yeah, if you cross the line, I'm just going to call DCFS on you.
Really? You
know? Yes, honest to God. I mean, it's not an uncommon thing.
Wow.
Now, it rarely actually happens, but the point being, kids are kind of onto us.
Yeah.
And I'm not altogether against that, because I think it fosters less fear in the kids and, you know, and parenting out of fear. You know what I mean? Like, you're in big trouble and wait until you get it. Wait until mom or dad gets home. And I would much rather there be a connection fostered and a discussion fostered instead of just having a fearful child who's just waiting to get punished.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where we get into discussions a lot on this very show when something comes up. Well, these kids don't respect their parents anymore. Just because you're not afraid of your parents like we were does not mean you don't respect them, correct?
What a fine line, but you're absolutely right. When it comes down to it, I was working with a family not long ago, and mom and dad were dwelling on the idea that this kid just didn't respect them because he didn't follow the rules and he didn't fall into place and he wasn't getting the grades he was supposed to get. And he finally said, I have a lot of respect for you. I'm struggling in a lot of areas of my life that you're not happy with, but I really appreciate all you do for me and I have a lot of respect.
Yeah.
And that gave the parents a little room to breathe. You know what I mean? They were like, oh, okay, we didn't raise this kind of monster. This is a really good kid. He's just trying to figure it out. And there's a difference. But if you assume that the misbehavior is disrespect, then you've created a real, like, communication problem, I think, between you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Times have definitely changed, and that's where I finally remembered what I was going to ask you. Reading up on books, parenting and stuff, and you see the common thread between a lot of them that even though kids will fight you on consequences and such, kids do want boundaries. They do want to know they're taken care of. And that's where I think sometimes people forget about that. Is that true? Do kids want boundaries?
I agree. Yeah, completely. Kids will never thank you for it. This is the tricky part, right? But they need structure and clarity and boundaries. And I think the more set in stone it is for a time period anyway, the better off they are. They know that, okay, this isn't going to be a negotiation. This is what, this is the rule. And so, once I realize I violate the rule, it's a choice I've made, and I'm going to have to stick to the consequence. You know, without there being this big blow up or discussion, it's just really, really clear. And it protects a lot of time then for just connecting with your kid, just having a good time with them. And you're not spending all your time talking about, well, here's what you did wrong, and here's why I'm going to add to the consequence, you know, and then everything becomes like quicksand. You know what I mean? Nothing is really clear.
All right, we have Dr. John Duffy in the studio, and Derek, we have to go to a break, but John had mentioned that sometimes kids are not scared of their parents anymore and sometimes threaten to call the police or DCFS. You know something about this?
Yes. When I was in school, they had a little conversation with us about it and gave us little cards to call us for whatever reason, and my dad told me to do something or whatever and or else, and I said, well, fine, I'm going to call this number. And he said, go ahead.
What happened?
Then you can share a big room with a bunch of people and not have anything of your own anymore.
Did you make that call?
I walked inside and threw that piece of paper out.
Yeah. Sure.
Probably the right thing to do, Derek. I think your dad probably had a pretty good point there.
Thanks for sharing that. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200. We have some people lined up that have questions for Dr. John Duffy. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Dr. John Duffy, he is a fine therapist, a psychologist. My sons see you, so I'm not going to hog you. We have listeners who would like to talk to you, if that's okay.
That sounds good.
All right, Linda is on the line. And Linda, Dr. John Duffy.
Hi, Dr. Duffy. My son is currently a junior at the University of Southern California. He was diagnosed last year with depression, anxiety, and panic disorder. And has really had a very difficult time getting through every semester. And thankfully, we'll be coming home this summer. And I'm looking for really good therapy and psychiatric help for him. to help with his disorder. I mean, I also suffer from depression and anxiety, and my son knows that, and I'm not ashamed to say that, and he knows that he needs help, but he's having an extremely difficult time trying to get through school. He just completed an intensive outpatient program, IOP, through the school.
Right.
Which they offered, which is wonderful, but still worried about, I want to make sure that he has a good transition from his college to home in terms of therapy.
Got it, Linda. Okay, so the let me give you the good news first. You know, your son is an age where depression, anxiety, some panic issues come up a lot. So I don't want you to feel like he's alone. As you might know, that IOP program and some of the other therapy programs at USC are available because there are kids who need them. And also, everything he's going through is really treatable. It's a really stressful time in life, right? But this
Correct.
Stuff is manageable. And if he's coming back to the Chicago area, there are a lot of therapists trained to work through these issues with kids this age. So I'm glad that he's already gone through the IOP program. He's probably familiar with a lot of the language that is healing in this regard. And so the goal probably, I would argue, for the summer is to get him in to see a therapist who has experience with people his age and around depression and anxiety and panic. And in a dozen weeks or however long his summer is, I am confident that he can, if not get entirely past these issues, get to the point where he can manage them pretty well. I assume he's a pretty bright guy and a pretty insightful guy. And if he's willing to go through an IOP program, that sometimes with young men in particular is half the battle. So I already think you've come a long way toward addressing that with him.
All right, Linda.
Absolutely. I mean, we're really happy that he was a part of the program. You know, our concern is that, you know, we never know in the middle of the night if we're going to get a phone call where he's absolutely inconsolable because of his anxiety and depression, and just want to make sure that we make the connection with the right therapist and aren't really quite sure what the next step is in terms of a therapist in the Chicagoland area, because he's in California right now.
Somebody has just texted in. His name is Ben Harris. And again, do your research and check the website. But the Anxiety Treatment Center of Greater Chicago, offices in Deerfield and downtown. I work there. We're very good at what we do. And that's just it, John, is a lot of people don't know where to turn to get help.
It's true. It's true. And I'm glad Ben wrote, because that is actually a really, really good resource. And Linda, if you need to reach out to me, I'd be happy to help you identify the right therapist as well. And I'll throw in one other thought. You know, if you find that he's having a really difficult time coping, there is no shame in taking a little extra time if you feel like at the end of the summer, he's just not really where he needs to be, and taking, you know, a semester or even another year just to make sure he's got his legs underneath him, that he feels good, a little less depressed, a little less anxious, and a little able to cope better and make it through that last year successfully. So I don't want you to dismiss that idea altogether either. That happens frequently and typically works out pretty well.
And we are all about that, all about working together to provide the best care that we can for him, no matter what it is, what it takes, and, you know, working on what his goals are and what he wants to accomplish. We just know that he needs a great deal of help when he gets home, and we're just looking for the best help that we can for him.
And John, don't you think that a very important issue here is that her son did participate in the intensive outpatient program, because he realizes then that something, he needs help with something.
Absolutely. And that, like I was saying, with young men, that's a big part of the issue, is just getting him in the room and working, and given that he is well aware of it and maybe uncomfortable enough with the depression and anxiety that he really wants to do something about it and he's motivated, you're a long ways towards solving the problem, Linda.
And Linda, why don't
Thank you so much.
Hang on a second. We'll get your number. Kevin will get your number, and we can arrange for you and Dr. Duffy to discuss this a little further.
Good luck with all this, Linda.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Good luck, Linda.
The hardest part there, John, is what Linda said, is that they're here, he's in California, you can't keep that close of an eye on him at a crucial time.
Right, and you know, Linda, if you're still listening, you know, that is really important, and it's not a reasonable, tenable place to keep your family, right?
Yeah.
Because it puts you in a really, really bad spot, and the message he's sending you pretty well is he's not coping very well, right?
Right.
And so,
but he's already a junior. I'm kind of surprised he's still there.
It's interesting because normally when these things happen, it happens freshman year, maybe early sophomore year. So there's probably some strengths that he has that, you know, he's been exhibiting for these couple of years in order to manage these difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I would guess if he were sitting right here, the depression, the anxiety, the panic disorder didn't just show up in his life. He's probably been managing it really well. So part of the treatment ought to be focused on the strengths he already has.
Yeah.
And people have to start parenting for their own children. And who gives a care what other people say about your children? Because a lot of times we get in that mode where we're trying to make ourselves look like a good parent. Somebody called me the other day here on the air and said, "You must be a terrible parent." You know what? I do the best I can. I took offense to it because we're all trying every day. I got to stop worrying about what other people think. And listeners, you do too. Work what's best for your family.
We all do. You know, I think we all have to recognize we're doing our best. We're acting on behalf of our kids as best we can. Every kid is different. Every kid has different needs. Most all of us struggle at some point in our lives. So you can't judge yourself if, just like Linda's son, that they're in that spot where they're struggling, because that is not the end of the world. And typically, 3-4 years down the road, Linda's son and people like him will look back and say, you know what, that wasn't a bad time. I learned a lot about myself during that rough time in my life that I wouldn't have learned if things have gone smoothly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
sure.
A good point.
Yeah.
It makes sense. John, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you being here. It's
What's
Dr.
your
John
website?
Duffy.
I'm sorry, it's not on here.
www.drjohnduffy.com.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
We'll take a quick break. The news with Kim next, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, finally, I have another girl to back me up on some things.
What happened?
Well, Kim Gordon's here, and these are things your husband wishes you would do more often.
Oh,
boy.
Really? Yeah?
And having another girl here, and Kevin is not a husband yet, but will soon be. And Bill, you are.
Yeah.
I want to know if these are things that husbands really wish that we as women would do more often.
Oh, I can't wait to hear them. All right.
Break out into a spontaneous dance party.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
I can't see my husband having that at the top of his list.
But you know what? I have to say this. I do see girls who do that from time to time, just start dancing. And I always say the same thing to myself. I'm so glad I'm not married to that girl, because that would drive me nuts.
All right. Well, they say, and again, this is from redbookmag.com.
Yeah.
Or whatever your silly side has the urge to do. So not necessarily a dance party, because I would never do that ever. I don't dance.
But you've seen girls do that, right? For no reason. They just start dancing and you go, what happened to you? Why do you?
Only can't... Beyonce. That's the only one I've seen do that.
All right.
And Jay-Z's cool with it.
Yeah.
But just silliness. According to Red Book magazine, men feel relief when they get an occasional break from a woman's serious, action-oriented sides. Jim loves when I like get goofy about something.
I'm sure of it.
Like
Why
a
not?
Giggle attack or just doing something really stupid.
See, the part that bothers me is that it says that women's normal serious side. My wife isn't normally serious. Like if something is serious, she is, but that's not
Your girls
common...
take care of themselves. They run the house.
Yeah, I think so.
Because women have to be very type A in order to get everything done.
Yeah.
There's just a lot. You have, and Kim, you can attest to this, kids, if your kids are in sports, carpools, going to work, keeping the house clean. I should remember that.
Circle that one.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on, and I will tell you this, and there are a lot of times I ask you questions, Bill, and you're like, I don't know, Terry handles that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times that I'm at work and I get texts like, which prescription do you want me to pick up? Where is the garbage sticker? I still, while at work, have to filter through some things.
Yeah.
So it is nice just to not be serious and to just have some fun.
But a dance attack is not going to solve that problem.
All right. Now, this, I bet, is totally true. And this I should do more often. I don't know about you, Kim. But these are things your husband wishes you would do more often. We women, tell him how awesome he is. I don't do that enough.
I probably don't do it enough either, but I should, because my husband is really awesome.
But you know what?
You just did it. We'll send him the tape.
You just did it. But a guy would think something was up if out of nowhere, if your wife just started telling you that for no reason, you'd go, oh, I must be dying or something.
Well, if you say it too much, then it doesn't mean anything when you say it.
Right. It waters it down.
Like, he did a big Costco run for me yesterday, which was really nice. And I really, you know, I thanked him for it. And it was awesome. It was great.
You know, that's weird because, all right, the same kind of thing, Kim. Jim decided for, on Monday night, he decided, I'm going to run to the Jewel and get you some Monopoly pieces. And, wow. You know, we're going to have a Tavo Taco Vinen Tuesday at our house, and we're going to watch the Hawks. And so Jim went out and got all the taco fixins. Mm-hmm. And he came home, and I did make a big deal about it. I'm like, oh, my God, this makes my job so much easier. I love to cook. If it's all here and ready, I can come home and just start cooking. Mm-hmm. I don't have to go to the store and then start cooking.
Sure.
And he ate that up. He's like, oh, thanks. I just thought, you know, I'd help. But there are times that he does something, and I'll go, thank you so much. And he goes, don't patronize me.
Oh, no, really?
He goes, it's just running to Walgreens to pick up the prescriptions. Why would you thank me? And I'm like, I'm just trying to act. I'm not even act. I'm trying to tell you I appreciate
it. So you never know from good deed to good deed if you will take it as an honest compliment or as you patronize.
And I wasn't. I was trying to say. But then I, you know, then it's like, you know, I'm not going to thank him every time he loads the dishwasher because really that's
part of his job description.
Kind of.
Sure.
And he always does do the dishes. I cook. He cleans the dishes. Mm-hmm. So if I thank him, I don't because it's like I don't want him to think it's anything special.
No, that's how it should be, right? I think.
He shaved yesterday.
Did you thank him for shaving?
No, but me and the kids were staring at him.
While he was shaving
no,
or afterwards?
No, after it was finished, I'm looking at him trying to figure out what's missing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did you shave? And he goes, yeah. He goes, you know, I shaved off my beard last year and no one even noticed. And I'm like, well, this time we did.
Oh, no.
So I'm like, you look great.
Wait, he had a beard for a long time and nobody noticed it was gone?
It was one of those, like, you know, trendy short beards. It wasn't like a full-blown Scott Darling beard.
Oh.
It was just like the shadow.
Still, you'd think somebody in the family might have noticed. Nobody noticed.
It's a busy time. No one was looking at his face.
Wow.
Things your husband wishes you would do more often. Oh, I hope this is true.
What is it?
You guys wish that we girls would go out with our girls more often.
Now, I have to say, maybe I'm an exception to the rule, but I think my wife goes out with her friends just the right amount of time. Once or twice a month.
Yeah, but you encourage it, right?
Yeah,
you
oh, sure, say, oh, absolutely. I would never,
no,
never.
My husband always encourages me to go.
I never do it.
You don't ever?
You need to do it.
You should.
Why wouldn't you?
I just have too much stuff going on.
It's hard with the age of your kids. Like, now that my kids are all grown up and gone.
It's
you know,
easier?
Yeah, much easier. Well, you know that, Bill.
Yeah.
And girls are a little more self-sufficient than boys. I hate to say that, but they really are. And Kim, it's so funny you say that because somebody texted and said, my kids are 13 and 16. They're boys. And somebody goes, boy, you know, with all the things you say you do for your kids, I thought they were toddlers.
Yeah.
But they do change between teenage years and going off to college, Kim, don't they?
Yeah, but even when they're teenagers, I think there's even more going on than when they're toddlers because they, you know,
there are bigger things
getting,
they
right,
can
bigger,
get into.
Bigger things to do, more games, getting ready for college. There's a lot going on.
But you don't. I know you have every once in a while you meet up with a group of friends. And
I haven't done it recently. I'm always the one that at the last minute I can't make it because something's going on. I got to take somebody somewhere or something. But I made a date. I think it's May 6th on a Thursday night. I am going to some craft show with a couple of my gal pals.
Yeah.
I never say gal. I really hate that I said that.
I was shocked that you said that, but there's yarn involved, so I guess all the rules are out the window.
There's no yarn.
At a craft show?
Well, it's...
That's not
I
a
don't
craft
know what,
show
it might
not
be
yarn.
Clothes. It's, all I know is your ticket. It's at Medina Country Club, and it includes wine, chocolate, and shopping. So I'm like, count me in. I got my ticket last night.
All right.
But Jim does encourage me to go out.
You just don't follow through.
I feel like I'm needed too much. Oh. So maybe I should let them stand on their own two feet.
See how they do without you.
All right. We have one more, then we're going to take a break. These are things that our husbands wish we would do more of, more often. Throw in a load of laundry. Wait.
Was this written in 1963?
Well, so you wish we'd throw in a load of laundry? Don't we usually?
Well, yeah.
Or you should do it.
A guy could also do it.
I don't get that one.
I don't. Okay. Before we trigger any outrage, let us explain. This is Red Book Magazine. In healthy relationships, housework is divvied up or divided up. But I decided to say divvied.
Sure.
But it's not always split down the middle. What with jobs, kids, and a life in the mix, sometimes one of you ends up cleaning more than the other, which is cool so long as it gets balanced out down the road. And even if it's his task to do the laundry, if he's super swamped that week, do your best not to hem and haw about handling it. Tossing in a load without complaint will show him you're a team. This is written by a woman who
doesn't get it. This is from a long time ago.
I know.
Now, I think I have told you this. We bought a new washing machine a couple months ago, and it was a cheaper machine, and this was the stupidest thing we ever did. It keeps tearing clothes. It keeps eating holes in our clothes.
It's still doing this?
Yeah, and it's been 4 months or 5 months now. However, my wife has figured out some formula of water to cleaning solution to clothes that I can't. It's some mathematical formula that I can't for the life of me figure out. But when she washes the clothes, we don't get holes in them. But when I wash them, we get holes in them all
awesome
the time.
Awesome job, Bill.
You mean in being crafty enough to figure out how to
yes.
not figure this out?
Good job.
I've tried to, but I keep
Somebody
losing
called.
Shirts. Every time I wash them, I get holes in my shirts.
This was like months ago, and I can't believe you still have this issue because somebody said with these newfangled washing machines, the water level is set lower,
yes.
and you need to add more water.
You have to trick your machine into thinking you have either more or less clothes. It's the weirdest thing
Just
in the world.
Just add more water.
Oh, it's not that easy.
Ask your wife how she does it.
She's shown me, but because there's, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, there's math involved. But every time I put a shirt in there, I look like the Hulk. I put the shirt on, and I look like I've burst through my shirt.
Maybe that's her secret fantasy.
It is. She calls me Lou Ferrigno. It's uncomfortable.
And then what do you say, huh?
Hulk don't know how to wash clothes. And then I throw stuff. All right, we'll come back.
Did you say hunk or Hulk?
Hulk. It's
you do have a weird fantasy.
Either one of them work. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then more things that apparently husbands want their wives to do more often. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy. Before we continue, things your husband wishes you would do, ladies, we go to the newsroom and Ken Gordon.
Well, and speaking of women, the Treasury Department has just confirmed that it plans to replace former President Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill with civil rights icon Harriet Tubman.
Excellent.
A good choice.
Yeah. Very good choice.
And so, you know, there's been a whole big thing about Alexander Hamilton staying on the $10 bill because of the big Broadway show Hamilton.
Right.
So he is going to stay on the $10 bill, but the back of the note will feature, I guess you could call it a slogan that says, "Women struggle to achieve the right to vote." So Alexander Hamilton is staying on the front of the $10 bill, but there's going to be a mention of women on the back.
Isn't that funny, though?
Yeah.
It's because of the,
the
Broadway
because
show.
Because the Broadway show has made Alexander Hamilton this new superhero.
Yep.
So where's Harriet Tubman?
She's going to be on the 20.
Oh, we get the 20.
Yeah, we get the 20.
That's better.
Rock on, sisters.
Yeah. So they're taking off President Andrew Jackson.
Take that, AJ.
Harriet Tubman on.
She yeah. had a musical after you.
I bet it's good. That's the next one up.
Yep.
That is unbelievable. I saw that. I thought I was reading it from The Onion.
No, it's real.
That yeah. show, the Broadway show, was
the hottest ticket on Broadway for
it
the last 10 years.
It's coming here. I can't wait.
Yep. With Billy Deck. He's going to play all the roles. It's a one-man Billy Deck show, Wendy. Get your tickets now.
All right, back to things your husband wishes you would do more often. Let him get a little vulnerable.
Yeah.
All right, we admit it. The word vulnerable sounds all kinds of self-help book cheesy. But until recently, according to Redbook.com, it wasn't really a thing for men to embrace their soft sides, their failures, or their weaknesses. In our society, men don't traditionally get to cry or admit they're feeling scared or hurt and may feel shame because these things aren't manly. That's an unfair thing to ask of anyone. I think we as women are cool with that. It's just men do not like to show their softer side.
I'm sure at some point you have seen your husband cry.
Yes.
You don't think less of him because he's
no,
crying.
No, I loved him more.
Kim, same with you?
Yeah, my husband is a softie.
Yep.
He cries. I mean, we laugh at him because he
yeah.
cries so much.
Well, that happens at your house.
Yeah. All the time.
He's a big crier.
Jim doesn't cry that much. In fact, I wish he would cry more.
Really?
I really do.
Yeah?
He cried at the birth of our kids. 9/11 is when he really cried. It's
right
just all of a
so.
Sudden it hit him.
Sure.
You know, it's like you're watching it and you're not really... comprehending what's going on, and then yeah. There's been a couple other times, but he should cry more.
When I do, I am made fun of by all three members of my family, by both my daughters and my wife. There was an episode of, I don't want to go into specifics, but on a TV show that several of us watched together, a major character lost their life last week, and I was weeping, and they just looked at me, and they go, they stopped the DVR, they stopped it, and they go,
and they look at,
look
you.
At you. And I go, I didn't want that person to die. I didn't.
Shame on them.
I know.
That's a little much.
It is kind of funny that they enjoy it so much. But I would, if the tables were reversed, and I don't know what it is.
You would comfort them.
I would definitely comfort them. But the way that society is structured, it should be them that are more emotional, not me. But for some reason, it's me.
But when you cry at the drop of a hat.
Right. Right.
If we can go back to the start of the show when you said that you know no one that swears more than I do.
Right.
I watch the Goldbergs every week with the boys.
Yes.
And Bevy always has a little moment in the show where they have to blur her mouth because she says a word every week. And every time that happens, the kids look at me. And every time she does something where she admits fault, like maybe she's a smother and she's smothering her kids, but she's like, you just mean the world to me and I want to make everything good for you guys. They pause it and look at me and lean forward to see if I'm crying.
Yeah.
The Goldbergs makes me cry.
How about that? How about that?
So they, you know.
But what kind of rotten kids did we raise where they would take a moment out of their busy schedule to stop a DVR, stop a show?
We didn't have DVRs or remotes when we were growing up to do that to our parents.
I guess.
All right. Again, these are things your husband wishes you would do more often. I bet this is absolutely true. Initiate sex.
With me or a stranger? I would hate for my wife to just go up to a guy and go,
with you, goof.
Hey. Oh, with me? Yeah, then it's fine.
We are the gatekeepers, and we don't want to be. We just are. We're busy. This is so written by a woman. I mean, really, I know I've been accused of whining, but listen to this. You're busy, overworked, exhausted. Girl, we feel you.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
This is 2016, last time I checked.
Yeah.
Red Book Mag. All right, so that's true. Men wishes we would initiate sex more often.
I don't think a guy matter. It doesn't matter who it is. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's me. Maybe you just spin a wheel somewhere and it says have more sex. I just think a guy's going to be agreeable to it more times than not.
All right, do you want us to do this, Bill? Speaking for the married manly type, compliment how well he's balancing everything. Are you balancing everything?
No.
Right,
I'm not.
Let's skip
But that's kind of like the one from earlier about giving him praise for doing something. That's almost the same thing, isn't it?
It is, kind of. Yeah. That would go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Let him off the hook. I can't do that. I have told you so moments.
Be more specific on letting him off the hook.
It's natural to feel a little protective of your you and me time every now and again, but don't guilt trip him about it. That never ends well. Men want to enjoy outlets outside their marriage, friends, sports, Star Wars podcasts, toy rooms, whatever, and not be made to feel guilty about it. It might sound kind of duh, but if you're honest, you probably do it sometimes, right? Don't beat yourself up. Just make a point of encouraging him, or at least not picking on him the next time he wants to do his thing. Oh, he can do his thing whenever he wants.
I don't know if it's just me, but I don't think I'm capable of being guilt tripped. I don't think anything that my wife or my kids could do would guilt trip me. I don't think.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Bill.
I'm trying to think of an example of when I've been
guilt tripped.
Well,
that's true, Kim. If you remember that the day of one of his daughter's college orientation, you had a tennis match.
It was moving week.
Yeah, they didn't guilt trip you into changing that.
I don't think I could be. I don't remember ever being guilt tripped.
I've pondered that for a long time.
Yeah, but it was more internal. It was Reese's turn to move into school. It wasn't from her. It was more me.
It was
me.
Your own guilt trip.
Yeah. I guess I could do it to myself. But I don't think.
You're a piece of work.
I don't think anyone else could guilt trip me, but I guess I could guilt trip myself. Yeah.
If your wife wanted to go somewhere with you and you had plans, she just kept saying, Bill, seriously, come on. We have to go on this vacation. Who cares about your tennis tournament? It's one game. Will you go away for a romantic weekend with me? and wear your Hulk shirt.
I would wear my Hulk shirt if it was a romantic weekend.
She couldn't
weekend.
Guilt trip you into changing your tennis game?
I don't think so. I
wow,
think it
you
would
don't
either...
love them.
No, I do. Of course I do. I do.
I know you do.
I don't think it could. I think once it's made up in my head, I guess I don't know. I guess I could be, but for the most part, I think I would just it's
do
just,
what you want, Mr. Selfish.
Yeah,
I think the more Bill plays tennis in the world, the better the world is.
The better
really.
The world is.
So I think he's doing it for all of us.
Steve, what Steve says is true.
Because Jim sometimes gets these invitations to go to California for some Star Wars-related thing, and he sends me an email, and he says, I'd like to do this, and I respond, then do it.
Well, there are times where I'll say to my wife, it's up to you. Here's the situation. I can do this or do this. It's your call. But I think once it's established, I know. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? I think, maybe.
I don't know anything anymore. I just know you're not the typical guy. I'm not the typical girl, so your mileage may vary.
That's true. All right, Steve Bertrand is here. He's the host of the Wintrust Business Launch. He'll explain what's coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. Part two, or the second show for us, for Bill and Wendy here on WGN. We're at 312-981-7200. We wanted to talk about something that we started talking about at the very beginning of the show, part one of the show, earlier this morning.
Show number one.
Show
We've
number
decided
one.
It's not parts, it's two separate shows.
Yeah.
Albeit short ones.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's two shows. Makes
for the
it seem
price
like
of one.
It, right.
Free.
It seems like everyone's getting a bonus show.
Except for us.
You and I are not, but the listeners are getting a bonus show. We are, of course, very upset that the Blackhawks are now down 3-1 in their series against the St. Louis Blues. But we're also upset and disappointed in Andrew Shaw, one of, in my opinion, one of the gutsiest of all Blackhawks, a guy who just doesn't seem to know how to lose. He doesn't want to lose. He does everything in his power to make things happen on the ice. And as you're probably aware, and you may have heard in Kim's news, before we had to say he allegedly said some things, but now he's admitted it and he's apologizing for using a gay slur during last night's game.
And if I may just say, I mentioned this earlier, sometimes when you're mad and upset and the passion is in you, you say things, and he was questioned as to what did you say, and he goes, I don't even know.
Right.
I was just saying stuff.
Right.
I believe that. I do believe that sometimes you will say things and you're like, I don't know, I lost control for a minute. However, there are certain words I don't have in my vernacular that I whip out at any given moment.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know how you're able. I don't know how anyone could filter. Like, you have the. We know what the words are, and we know who would be upset by saying certain words. So how are you able to determine, even in a split second, even in a moment of passion? He was very upset yesterday, obviously, but you still have to be able to control the ability to not reference those particular words, right?
There's certain words that should not be uttered.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. And I know the whole point when you're mad at someone and you go on a rant,
yeah,
you're trying to hurt their feelings.
Sure.
That's a given.
Right.
Andrew Shaw, as Kim played, has issued a statement. And in case you're just tuning in, Andrew Shaw has issued this. And we also have a statement that the Chicago Blackhawks have come up with or came out with. Andrew Shaw, quote, I am sincerely sorry for the insensitive remarks that I made last night while in the penalty box. When I got home and saw the video, it was evident that what I did was wrong, no matter the circumstances. I apologize to many people, including the gay and lesbian community, the Chicago Blackhawks organization, Blackhawks fans, and anyone else I may have offended. I know my words were hurtful, and I will learn from my mistake.
All right. I know this is just guesswork at this point. But is that him on his own saying, I need to make a statement, or is that somebody higher up at the team saying, Andrew, you made you look bad, you made the city look bad, you made the team look bad, you have to fix this, and you have to fix this fast? What do you think goes on behind the scenes there?
Can I read the Chicago Blackhawks statement,
sure,
and then we will discuss amongst ourselves?
Yeah.
Here's what the Chicago Blackhawks have issued. We are extremely disappointed in Andrew Shaw's actions last night. His comments do not reflect what we stand for as an organization. We are proud to have an inclusive and respectful environment and to support various initiatives such as the You Can Play Project and the Chicago Gay Hockey Association. We will use this opportunity to further educate our players and organization moving forward so that we all may learn from it. Now, you asked me if this is something Andrew came up with on his own.
Yeah.
I think it's a little of both. Listen, when you say something mean to someone,
yeah,
whatever it is you say, you feel bad about it. I know it would be great if we all thought before we spoke.
Sure, of course.
Sometimes we don't do that.
Right, right. Yeah, I imagine at some point, either last night or this morning, somebody talked to Andrew and said, the team is losing and that's bad, but this is just as bad because the Blackhawks have done nothing but bring goodwill to the city. When you think about them now, you think about all the good that they're doing, not just on the ice, but they're visiting hospitals. The list goes on and on of things that they're doing that are nice, and this is a terrible black mark on the team. So whatever happened behind the scenes, if it was Andrew saying to them, what do I need to do to fix this? Or if it was them saying, Andrew Shaw, let's get behind this and figure this out and make people know that this is not the way you normally are or the team normally is. Something needed to be done and fast, and they're moving on it. So
and
that's
I'm glad
good.
They did do it.
Yeah.
And I know that Nicholas Jalmerson has been in videos for this You Can Play project. And there was one other Blackhawk that I cannot remember who has been featured in videos. Because as you mentioned, the Hawks really do a lot of behind-the-scene goodwill stuff. It's Scott Darling. Defenseman Nicholas Jalmerson and goaltender Scott Darling participated in a video supporting the You Can Play project's mission. So yeah, that's bad. I have a question though.
Mm-hmm.
If Andrew Shaw would have said a swear word, the F word or some derivation of it, would he be in the spotlight as much as this?
If he had said, all right,
instead of doing something,
apparently he used a gay slur that starts with the letter F, but what you're saying is
a different F word.
The F word, the one that's the king of the swear words.
I think he started with that one, didn't he?
But I don't think he would have been in trouble for just swearing, which is also unsportsmanlike conduct.
It is, but I think I'm just guessing here, and Steve, if you have an opinion, please share it, but I think the league accepts that word a lot more readily, the F word, the one,
right.
Know, I think they just assume that in the sport of play, that word is going to be said quite a bit.
And that's not singling anyone out. That's offending everyone.
Which shouldn't be offensive, because if you're doing it right, it's a pleasurable act.
Well, again, the most versatile word in the English language is that.
It is. Absolutely
a verb,
it is.
A noun,
yeah.
An adjective, an adverb.
Yeah, it's a
pleasure,
modifier.
Pain,
yeah.
Anger.
It's got 1,001 uses. But I think the gay slur is the one I would imagine, and it is in this case, it does, doesn't it? It really does. Now, in addition to this, we have a story that is similar yet different going on in baseball with Jason Hayward. Jason Hayward, for those of you who don't know, is a fine baseball player, now a member of the Chicago Cubs, was a player for the St. Louis Cardinals last season. The Cardinals weren't too thrilled with the fact that he left town, especially to come to us, that, you know, their
the
rivalry. They didn't want to see that happen. And there's a lot of people in St. Louis that that booed him the other night when he first came out. It was his first game back, you know, at Busch Stadium. Well, those boos have turned way, way worse. Now, there's all kinds of reports that as of last night, as Jason Hayward was playing ball out there in St. Louis, that the N-word was being uttered by several people in the crowd. That's what they were referring to him as. Again, have we not progressed at all? Have we not advanced as a society at all where a guy who's just trying to earn a living, he's a baseball player, he's going out there and trying to succeed. He used to do that for the Cardinals. Now he's doing it for the Cubs. And the thank you he gets for doing that is to have fans at an arena refer to him as the N-word. That's awful. That's terrible.
Really, it's 2016, and there are certain words that you don't say. And
I would hope so, but then, like, every time I think, okay, we've progressed, we're beyond that. Like, I remember it was standard fare at our school, and this is horrible. This is horrible. I would hear that word on an almost daily basis. I would hear the N-word. I would hear the F-word, the gay slur. that was just a common, almost everyday thing. Somebody at school would call somebody else one of those or equally as bad or worse words. Now, that was in the 60s and the 70s. But I would think by now, with everybody trying to be smarter and more sensitive, that that would be eradicated. But then here's two examples in the last, hour where we've not advanced.
And I know when you say something mean to someone, the whole deal is you're trying to spark an emotion from them.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
But there, again, you mentioned at the start of show number one that you don't know anyone who swears more than I do, right. Which I still take offense to because you've worked in comedy circles, for God's sakes.
I know. You'd think I'd run into somebody.
Some filthy people you have worked with, men and women.
Nope. You're worse than Sam Kinison. You're worse.
All right. Now I feel better. Thank
All right.
you.
You're welcome.
Because if I'm going to be worse than Sam Kinison, I want to take the prize.
You've achieved something.
But there are words that aren't in my vernacular.
No,
I would
I know
never
that.
Say those words.
Absolutely true.
I would say worse words,
right.
Swear related, but not race or sexual orientation related.
Right.
Because you just, whether you think it or not, and unfortunately there are people that think these words, you can't get away with saying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know that.
Yeah. So how do, let's take the Jason Hayward story into account for just a little bit in St. Louis. How does it happen where you're out in a public arena, you're out at a baseball stadium yelling that word at a player? How do you not think that there's not going to be some sort of repercussions, that other people aren't going to hear this and just go, what are you doing? How awful is that?
I know the whole point is you lose control. And trust me, I am the queen of no filter.
Right.
I know when the filters come off.
Yeah.
But there are certain words I just don't use.
Of course. You know those words exist. We all know those words exist. But hopefully you're savvy enough to go, this is territory I don't want to explore. I don't want to throw these words out because it's going to come back. It's going to reflect poorly on me. Or if you're, depending on what you do for a living, it'll reflect poorly on your company. If you're a fan of the St. Louis Cardinals, it makes you look bad. It makes your city look bad to be shouting this at a baseball player.
And this was the audience?
Yeah, this was the crowd at, not the entire crowd, certainly,
right.
At Busch Stadium, but it was select members of the audience yelling that word. I'll read you the whole story. It's on ESPN right now. Let's take a break, and I know there's people weighing in. 312-981-7200. You can give us a call or a text. We'll be back with more in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're talking about Andrew Shaw. A statement was issued by Andrew himself. I'm sincerely sorry for the insensitive remarks I made last night while in the penalty box. And the Blackhawks as well. There's a little bit more to it. You can find it at WGNradio.com. The Blackhawks have said we are extremely disappointed in Andrew Shaw's actions last night. His comments do not reflect what we stand for as an organization. More on that, you can go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com as well. They're talking about it. They're not sweeping it under the rug.
Right.
And I know people lose control and say things. I'm not going to retire my son Dylan's Andrew Shaw jersey. I chalk it up to everybody says something stupid once in a while.
Yeah, and I think that so far they've handled this very well. I don't know what will happen next. I don't know if there's a fine from the league. I guess they could suspend him. I guess they could fine him. It is disappointing because major league players of any sport are held in high esteem. They're heroes to some respect. So I guess you have to do something. A kid who loves him. I admire Andrew Shaw. I just admire his tenacity. And is
I still do.
I still do too. But it is disappointing. I'll just leave
you know
it at
what?
That.
And that is the most hurtful thing anyone can say. We have all said stupid things, and you'd rather somebody get mad at you than say you have disappointed
sure.
me. I'm sure he knows that.
That and, he's disappointed me.
Yeah, he texted me.
Did he? I'm sorry.
So sorry about disappointing Bill.
Oh no.
Hi Joe, you've called us at 312-981-7200. You have a thought on this or two?
Oh, am I on?
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going, guy? Love your show.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, as a gay man, openly gay man, and I'm literally yelling this in Lincoln Park right now.
Mm-hmm.
That so I'm not really anything. I don't really find anything offensive about it. I think the whole thing was kind of blown out of proportion, and I even said those kind of words in the heat of anger before. I know it's not acceptable, but there's just words. They're just words that our letters, and I don't know. I don't really.
So when you hear that word, though, it doesn't. But for people, and I guess I have to be delicate in saying or not saying the word,
the
but
word.
It's the gay slur that starts with the letter F. When you hear that word, that doesn't.
A British cigarette.
It's a British cigarette. You don't.
Yeah, it makes me want to smoke.
You don't cringe a little bit, though, Joe? No,
I do cringe because it is a little. It's completely unacceptable. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm from the South Side. Since school, you know, people have been yelling that stuff. It just rolls right off my shoulders.
So. There are words that sting, okay? If somebody calls me the bitch word. If I'm being one, I'll accept it. But if I'm not, that bothers me and it hurts. I also sometimes don't like when people go, "You're such a blonde." I mean, but people say things to hurt your feelings because they're mad and the filters come off.
Yeah, I guess the best thing to do is just not let them get the best of you. And, you know, I don't really know Andrew Shaw or anything. I think he's a tremendous hockey player. So,
as far as you're concerned, the apology was plenty enough. Maybe even you didn't even need to apologize. What do you think?
I think the apology was needed because, yeah, you do need to be. And I'm not any, like, Trump politically correct kind of guy. I'm just saying that, you know, yeah, you should apologize, but we should all just forget about it, really.
Good
all
to
right.
know.
Well,
as a gay man, just saying that.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks,
care.
Joe. And then this has come up, too, which is questionable. But, Steve, what do you have a question for us?
Yeah, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Great. Had a question. You know, I wonder where. You know, I don't condone the use of the N word or the F word for homosexual guys or women. But I'm wondering where does Andrew Shaw's freedom of speech get curtailed? Let's say you hear rappers and they can use the N word and they do in their songs, but. And it's okay for them to use the word cracker, but there's not the same.
Who uses cracker anymore? Do they really use cracker?
Oh, I've heard them use cracker, and so there's not the same stigma for them. But if the N word is used, then there's a stigma.
As soon as he puts on
the, I don't condone the use of it though.
As soon as he puts on the sweater and stands on the ice, he loses his freedom of speech.
If he's out on the street and he said it to somebody, I don't think this would be a.
Oh no, it would still be a huge problem.
Yeah, I don't know, guys.
He's got a contract to not embarrass the team in the NHL.
I guess, but you know, people eyes are on you when you're,
but especially then
playing hockey,
right on national television,
right.
Yeah.
Where people can read lips very easily.
And did.
Yeah.
So, Steve, we totally get it. It is a matter of freedom of speech, but you're also representing, in this point,
that's
true. He's representing himself, he's representing the team, he's representing the city, and it is freedom of speech, no question, but it's a judgment call, and if you'd make the wrong judgment call, and he did last night, now he's paying the price for it.
Right, and I agree. You know, he does set the image for the Blackhawks, and you know, he shouldn't be using the F word or the N word. Now there are some black hockey players out there in the league, and I think there's only a matter of time before some guy lets loose with the N word on the ice, and we're gonna hear about it. And there should be some repercussions for them. But I'm just kind of wondering where that kind of draws a line with the freedom of speech issue again.
All right, well, great. Thank you for calling, and I agree, and you do too, but this is, he's representing, like, if we're out on the street, we represent WGN.
Right.
In a sense.
Yeah.
That
horrifies them to think of that.
I don't know why
we
they
do.
Gave us that trust.
I don't know either.
But I'm kind of hoping now it goes away. He said something stupid. He has apologized. The Blackhawks say, hey, we don't condone this behavior. Let's move on.
I wonder, I mean, I know we'll know soon because the next game's tomorrow. I wonder if the league makes a statement and either suspends him or fines him. I guess we'll find that out in the next few hours, right?
That's I just want the next. Hawks to win.
I know. We all do.
I mean,
that's why the timing on this, there's never a good time for this to have happened, but it's really bad timing now. But it was. We get it. It was a moment of passion, but you still have to be so careful. And he wasn't so careful yesterday.
The only good thing I can think of right now about the way the series stands is I do better when my back's up against the wall. We all procrastinate. I turned in my tax stuff like at 10 p.m. on tax day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I procrastinate, and then you got
to
you
But you weren't down 3-1 to the IRS.
I know.
That's the difference.
That is
the
difference.
You did not come back from that. No, you
You can't
not.
Come back
no.
from that.
But we can still come back from this, and it's just it would be more comfortable for us as fans, and I'm sure for them as the Blackhawks, to be up a little higher in the...
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Oh, God.
All right, a break. Steve with the news. More show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's WGN. Steve, thank you so much. I have, Wendy, I have some startling news that may or may not be that startling. How's that for a disclaimer?
I like it.
I would put this under startling news, except I kind of already imagined this to be the case. But it turns out that it is an incredibly easy process for somebody to read your texts and your email. If somebody has it in their mind to read what you're texting to people, they can do that very, very simply.
You want me to read mine on the air right now? I don't even
right.
really care anymore.
I would bleep them out.
Yeah, we'd have to bleep them out.
Oh, God, you guys really annoy me so much.
I don't think I have sent a text or an email ever. And I mean, that technology has only been around for... How long have emails been around for? 15 years? 20 years? 20 years probably, right?
It's been that long.
Yeah, I think 20 years, I think. And texts a little bit less. I don't think I've ever sent one that I haven't assumed somebody couldn't somehow decipher and read if they wanted to. I just normally, as I'm sending them, I go, somebody's got the ability to read these if they wanted to. German security expert Karsten Knoll demonstrated...
His text number, 999.
demonstrated... The hack by tracking a brand new phone given to a U.S. congressman, Congressman Ted Lieu.
Oh, I thought it was Hillary Clinton.
No. Using only his phone number. What they're saying here is that if you're a hacker, all you need to know is that person's phone number, and you could easily hack into their account and read all their texts or all their email. Hackers have again demonstrated that no matter how many security precautions somebody takes, all a hacker needs to track their location and snoop into their phone calls and their texts is their phone number. That's it. You got your phone number? I can hack you. I can find out what you're texting or emailing. The hack, first demonstrated by the German security expert, again, Karsten Knoll.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a hack named Carrot Top.
He's also a hack, but a different kind of hack.
I couldn't think of anybody, by the way.
At a hacker convention in Hamburg...
Which Carrot Top was performing at?
The German Carrot Top. Dunkhoff Top. has been shown to still be active by Knoll over a year later. So he demonstrated this in 2014. He explained to everybody how easy it is. If I have your phone number, I can hack your account. I can read all your texts. I can read all your email. And he assumed back in 2014 that by telling this hacker convention that somebody would jump on it and go, well, we need to take bigger precautions. We need to protect people. But nope, now it's 2016. He says it's still in place. You could still do it. The same way he was doing it a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. He's still doing it.
Why don't they cancel the hacker convention and then no one will hack into your stuff?
That's a good question.
And can we get in touch with this guy and can we give him Officer Patrick's number?
Yes, the man we spoke with the other day. Yeah, we can talk to him about that.
I swear more than he does.
Well, I only talked to him for a couple of seconds, but he did swear once in those few seconds. So in terms of how many swears per minute, he's got you beat. But career achievement, you're still winning. Doesn't this... I know I should be surprised by this, but like I said at the very beginning of this, I've never sent anyone an email or a text ever once that I don't go, yeah, but if somebody wants to read this, they're going to get in and they're going to read this. You just assume that, don't you? Doesn't everybody know that?
Here's a rule of thumb I go by.
What?
Don't put anything in writing, typing, texting, or email that you don't want somebody to cut and paste and post somewhere else.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because if you're gossiping about someone or if you have a problem with your boss, which, of course, we don't.
We do not. No, not us, but others do.
Although,
we have problems with our bosses.
Will you spit in my mouth because there's still no water here and I'm a little parched?
Sure. I can do that for you.
I would never put anything... Like, I'm even careful with the mean people that I text back because they can cut and paste and put that somewhere.
Of course. And there's too many. We've heard 1,000 stories about somebody who doesn't mean to send out a group email. They just want to send something to one person, and they hit one wrong button, and then everybody gets that email.
I've done that with texts.
Oh.
When you get a group text and there are 5 people on there, and you want to maybe say something about one of the people, And then you send it and you look down and see group message and you're like, oh no.
Everybody got this. Yeah.
So, and it wasn't anything bad, but it was just like, oh, someone is a little cranky today.
Right.
And then I thought, you know what? I'm not going to do that stuff anymore.
No, it's smart. Well, I guess, like I said at the very top of this, I guess that we should be shocked by this. I'm not as shocked. My knowledge of things like this is extremely limited. I'm not good with anything technical. But if I know this, everybody knows this.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares anymore.
You're not safe. But how do people... I always wonder about people that have text affairs with people. You know what I mean? And I guess if you're having a text affair...
Who does that anymore?
People still do that, don't they?
I don't think they leave evidence on their phone. Would you?
No, that's what I mean. I don't know.
If you were having an affair with a toy seller in Washington State, and it wasn't really an affair, you just wanted to get wind of things that were available before anyone else could purchase them.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have that on your phone because Terry would laugh at you.
But aren't there ways to retrieve stuff you've deleted fairly easily on a phone, isn't there? There has to be.
For anyone but you.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
I wouldn't really know how to do it either. But they do say when you turn in your phone, like when you upgrade and get a new phone.
Yeah.
And I didn't do this. I trusted the girl who helped me. But you're supposed to back it up on your computer so you have all your contacts and everything or to a cloud. Mm. And then you're supposed to erase everything on your phone. And then someone else said, I think Bridget Carey said, if you're going to turn your phone in, erase your phone and then download a couple of songs on it that takes up a lot of data and then restore it again. So you're like double erasing it.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, when they get it back at the phone store, a lot of times they refurbish them and they'll delete them. They don't. If I worked there, I would look through everybody's stuff. Hey, look at this email. I can hack into this.
Tell them that when you apply for a job there. Say, I've got a weird hobby. It kind of ties into what you guys do.
But don't we know by now not to put anything that's incriminating in an email?
Yeah.
It's so easy for someone to forward it to someone else.
Of course it is. Right. Of course it is.
We should know better.
You would think. And yet people still get nabbed by this. All right, a quick break. A lot more show.
And you know who else is coming into the studio to talk to us about the whole Andrew Shaw Blackhawks thing? Dave Ennett will be by.
Oh, he will. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get the lowdown on that. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN, and we are joined by Dave Ennett. Dave, we were trying to find you because we were talking about this Andrew Shaw thing. We read the statement that Andrew apologized for. So I guess, as Bill said, we don't really have to say he allegedly said something. Right. And the Blackhawks organization was saying, you know, in no way do we condone this. I'm paraphrasing. So we were concerned and curious, is this something that he could face a fine for or any kind of game suspension? And would it happen during these playoffs right now?
Well, the NHL, the only thing they have said, Wendy and Bill, is that they are investigating it. And they have said until their investigation is complete, they're not going to comment on it. Now, there is precedent for at least fining a player for use of certain language. And it's happened in the NBA, and it potentially could happen here with the NHL.
Does this count for like swear words or something foul could. In that respect too?
Well, or obscene gestures, that sort of okay. thing. But specifically in the NBA, you may remember that Joakim Noah of the Bulls was fined for a similar homophobic slur.
I do remember that.
And there have been some others, Rajon Rondo, Kobe Bryant. So it has. This isn't the first time this has happened.
When Kobe Bryant does it, though, he buys everybody a very expensive ring, doesn't he?
That's exactly
right.
That's
his normal way yes. of making things right.
Yes, and then things are okay after that.
Yep.
My guess is that they've made the apology. Shaw has made the apology. The Blackhawks have distanced themselves from his statement and expressed their disappointment in it. And so I think that probably will mitigate and perhaps will lessen whatever discipline he might have faced from the NHL, if any. But I'm not sure. I mean, I think it's really important, I think, for all professional and college athletics, for that matter, and maybe even more so. We've had a number of incidents like this in the college ranks. Maybe it's it's more important for them to come out strongly to make a statement so they make sure that this doesn't happen. Because you can't afford to send the message out there that in some way you're not interested in a or you have feelings against a particular segment of society.
Correct.
Right? I mean, there's nothing about heterosexuality that makes you a hockey fan and someone who isn't straight wouldn't like the game.
Right, exactly.
And believe me, the Blackhawks want all fans. And this would be the same if it were an ethnic issue or
right.
a racial comment. I mean, they have to deal with these things.
Do you remember years ago, Dave, there was a pitcher for the Atlanta Braves named John Rocker?
Well, yes.
Okay, so
yes.
John Rocker is interviewed in a magazine and mm-hmm. said some incredibly derogatory things mm-hmm. toward gay people. And, mm-hmm. and now that I think about it, toward almost everybody.
He Who just, wasn't him.
Wasn't
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
John Rocker was not the happiest.
He didn't leave anybody out.
He offended everybody. Yep. I don't remember the Atlanta Braves doing or saying anything to negate any of John Rocker's words at the time. Do you? I remember them just kind of saying, that's John Rocker. He was interviewed. What his thoughts? Did
I
they
don't
go
know
deeper?
About that.
They couldn't just let him say
yeah,
stuff,
I,
could they?
You know, I'd have to go back. I don't remember. I mean, I remember the incident.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Sports Illustrated yep. article.
Yeah.
And it pretty much finished, although I know he became like a He wrote a book later, made the talk show circuit,
yeah.
Tried to say that he was a changed man.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was ever perceived the same way by baseball fans and by the public. I mean,
yeah.
I think it really damaged what was left of his career.
Yeah. I'm looking at a New York Times article online, and it says that Bud Selig suspended him,
then Commissioner of Baseball,
yesterday,
Bud Selig,
for 73 days.
Yeah, see, that's it. Yeah. That
oh, so they did
right.
take action.
Major League Baseball did.
But I don't remember the Braves ever doing it. Although, if Major League Baseball suspends you for that long, maybe the Braves just say, okay, well, he's taken care of.
Well, I think he had to ride that particular line of the New York subway for 72 of those days.
Good. That'll
that's
teach
right.
him. That'll teach him.
Yeah.
Now, the other story that this has kind of conjured up is what's going on with Jason Hayward, the Cubs outfielder who's mm-hmm. in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the story from, there's several sources mm-hmm. reporting this, that the fans out there are screaming the N-word at him as he's patrolling the outfield there in Busch Stadium.
Yeah, well, that was reported the first night
yeah.
that the Cubs played there.
Monday night.
And I have to tell you, I mean, I've been very impressed by the way Jason Hayward going into that series. He knew he was going to get treated roughly.
But not this roughly.
Not this,
this
roughly.
This is really
well, not,
roughly.
Well, it's, but he said, well, if they boo me, it means they didn't want me to leave.
Right,
so,
I love that.
But it's one thing to boo a player. It's another thing to whatever the case may have been, to use a racial
yeah.
epithet or something.
Yeah.
You know, every time you think somehow that fans have gotten past those days.
I know.
Something like, you hear something like this. And it might have been just one absolute knucklehead and with a loud voice.
Right, it could have
been,
that
everybody
I guess.
Heard.
Yeah.
Probably not. Probably more than one, but not necessarily the majority of fans. So, you know, it's a sad thing that we're sitting here talking about that in 2016.
It is.
All right, speaking of chanting things, I have another question for you, and Bill and I seem to agree. When opponents, Blues fans, what have you, yell, Crawford.
I heard you discussing
about
this.
It doesn't hurt him. Doesn't that make in his head going, oh, they're digging me.
They know my name.
Yeah, isn't that the whole point of it?
Well, I mean,
or they can read, maybe.
Right, they've read my name somewhere.
Yes, they're trying to get under his skin.
How does that get under somebody's skin?
I mean, but we've had that. That's been a thing for a long time, and baseball fans have done that. And I, you know what? I've always kind of wondered. I mean, I'm kind of with you. If they're chanting his name, it means they've noticed.
Yep.
Right.
And he's good enough that they have to pay attention to him.
That's what it's all about, getting the notoriety, getting noticed.
But mm-hmm. if we were going to chant Elliot, first of all, it's three syllables, so mm-hmm. it's a slight
Someone
harder
Someone started
name.
Sunday night when I was at the game, mm-hmm. and like five people joined in and realized this is too hard.
But shouldn't we do it in an E.T. voice?
Well, I would
Wouldn't
say
be better?
Just say...
Elliot.
No, it's just you want two syllables?
Yeah.
Phone home.
Phone home.
Oh, that's
home.
Even better.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant,
If you're going to
right?
the game, if we have that game... Yeah. Which I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm.
Do the phone home, people. Come on.
Can we start a campaign?
Yes.
We do t-shirts?
Yes.
Phone home.
Yes.
Just do it like that. Oh, I love it.
And giant foam fingers, like really long extended finger like E.T. would have.
Yes.
Oh, this
Perfect.
Is good, Dave.
Perfect.
I love it. I love it.
Solving problems. That's what we do around
That's
here.
That's why Dave comes in.
Thank you, Dave Bennett.
Dave, just really quickly before we let you go, mm-hmm. I know it doesn't look so good. We're down 3-1, mm-hmm. but crazier things have happened, right?
Well,
yeah.
How crazy do you want to get?
We've heard your stats, games 4-7.
The Blackhawks have been great.
What about games 5-7?
They've been terrific.
Even better.
They've been excellent.
Yeah.
But here's the thing to keep in mind. They've done this in this era. This era being from 2009 on, when Joel Quenneville came in, when they returned to the playoffs, they've been down 3-1 in a series and come back to force Game 7 3 times. They won one of those. That was against Detroit.
Oh, okay.
But they did against Vancouver in 2011.
Yeah.
They were down 3-1, forced it to Game 7. That was probably the parallel to this situation, because Game 7 was in Vancouver. They got to overtime in Game 7 and lost.
Yeah.
Then against the LA Kings 2 years ago, they were down 3-1, but they had Games 5 and 7 at home. Now, they ended up losing Game 7 on a fluke goal in overtime, but they got there.
But we've already seen in this series that even though home ice advantage should be a factor, the home team has only won 1 out of 4 games so far in the
They're
series.
A great road team.
Quite frankly, based on the last 2 games, I like the Hawks' chances in St. Louis maybe better than I would in game 6 back
that?
Here.
How
which I never
that?
Thought, those are words I never thought I'd
right.
say. But if you win game 5, now all of a sudden you look at game 6 differently, and all the pressure's on St. Louis because they don't want to have to play a winner-take-all game 7.
So true.
So you don't know.
Oh my gosh, I just can't stand the excitement.
Yep.
And our boss told me today, 3-1, we're coming back.
Is that right?
Yep. Well, so I take it to the bank.
He said it. Mm-hmm. Must be true. Thank you, Dave.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It. Mm-hmm. A quick break. Steve with the news, and then more ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Krista McQuarrie joins us right now. Fine columnist for the Chicago Tribune. We want to talk about what happened yesterday nationally with the primaries, but Karen Lewis just referred to Governor Rauner as the new ISIS. That's a weird compliment, isn't it? When you call somebody the new ISIS?
You know, I guess you just can't be surprised by anything she says. And I'm written columns about it, so I'm not surprising any of your listeners that I'm not her biggest fan. I don't think she really represents what teachers are looking for. She kind of represents the more radical side of the union. And she gets away with saying all kinds of outrageous things. And
it's a pretty remarkable thing, Bill, Wendy. You guys were talking, you know, just the last half hour about what Andrew Shaw said.
Yep.
Right.
And the trouble he got into that. I mean, this is a group that cuts people's heads off, Americans' heads off.
Yep.
And, you know, the speech issues are very different, but it's a pretty dramatic thing to say about someone.
A couple of weeks ago, and believe me when I tell you, I'm the last guy that would defend Donald Trump, but there were several people comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. And I said, I get it, but think about what Adolf Hitler had done in his lifetime, where he was gassing people to death. You can find a lot of bad things to say about Donald Trump. He's not gassing people to death.
As far as I know, he's not calling for that. Ethnic cleansing, as
right.
far as I know.
Right.
But people kind of make that leap because he did call for a pause on Syrian refugees.
I know.
And that's, to me, a big stretch from a pause to, you know, encampments where
mass
killings.
But, so do people in the public eye, people who are politicians or around that circle, they're just as accountable as anybody else, if not more so, when you compare somebody to ISIS or Adolf Hitler. You have to choose those words pretty carefully, don't you?
I think so, yes. Yeah. She is right now, Karen Lewis, they are talking about striking perhaps as early as middle of next month. And, you know, she likes to give red meat type speeches, and that's what this was. I don't really know how helpful it is toward the cause of educating children when you have your chief educator, you know, saying things like this, and also tolerating at the latest CTU rally a speaker who kept saying F the police, you know, at an education rally that was supposed to be about funding.
Whoa.
We tolerate a lot from her as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about yesterday. No major surprises. I guess Ted Cruz didn't have quite the showing that he was hoping for, did he? But other than that, no major surprises.
Zero delegates, not a one. Right? Yeah. Not a single one. And really didn't do as well in a lot of the more... There are some religious conservative enclaves in suburban New York, but they tend to be more Catholic than evangelical. So it was a pretty damaging loss for him that he came away with nothing, and John Kasich actually beat him.
So how did that happen exactly? What went on that more people in New York saw Kasich as a better option than Ted Cruz?
You know, it was in Manhattan where Kasich picked up, I think, these three delegates in that congressional district where Donald Trump lives. And I don't know. My knowledge of Manhattan is based on, like, Sex and the City episodes, so right. I'm super knowledgeable. But I get the impression that it's a more moderate, reasonable group of Republicans who would have rejected, you know, the Ted Cruz brand of far right, you know, very... very evangelical, and Donald Trump. And some people have suggested, you know, they see him all around town. His name is on every building. They might be a little over-Trumped, you know, over-served with Trump being in and around their daily lives all the time. He's on the, you know, and just from, not just from this presidential race, but for decades, he's been on the covers of all the socialite magazines. Yeah. And so I think they're a little tired of him, and that came through last night, I think.
I want to know what's going to happen here with how's Bernie doing?
You know, Bernie didn't have a great night either.
We expected Hillary to do well in New York, though.
We did. This is her adopted home state.
One of her 11 different home states.
Exactly. Well, I mean, they were broke when they left the White House, remember?
Yes.
She said that.
Yes.
They were how really broke.
I mean, strapped right. for cash.
You know, until their first speaking engagement where one of them raked in like $400,000.
I know. How do you get that? How do you get that? Yeah.
You know, I bet you could earn some money, Wendy Snyder.
What do I talk about?
Just, you know, just do a little stand-up.
You could do
it. You
know,
talk about the radio business. People would, I'm sure, pay $400,000. I'm lucky $5 for that.
I was just going to say, I'm lucky to get $20. Thanks for the faith.
So Bernie did not do that well, and I think he kind of expected to do a little better because he's kind of a neighbor, and has been doing well in East Coast states, but Hillary just trounced him. I mean, he actually went home, I think, and did that. I don't remember which other candidate, maybe Marco Rubio or somebody said they went home in the middle of the campaign to change their clothes and take a day off. Well, so did Bernie. He's a little burned out.
But
himself.
A terrible time to
he's
do that.
He's feeling the burn.
He's feeling his own burn. He wasn't even in New York.
Do you think the more aggressive tactic that he's taken, and actually not just him, but he and Hillary Clinton have been more aggressive toward each other, is that helping one or hurting one more than the other?
You know, I think it's kind of typical, and, you know, there's a lot of speculation that if they go too far, then she won't be able to get his supporters once she gets the nomination. They'll stay home. I don't really think so. I think every year you have a contested primary, and that base of voters eventually is going to float over to Hillary Clinton. There's no way they're going to go to the other side. And so the biggest risk that she takes is that maybe they stay home. But I just think that's even a small possibility. They will eventually rally around the nominee. And it looked like last night it's going to be Hillary Clinton.
Let's say the nomination is held today and it is the front runner for the Republicans. It's Donald Trump, and it's the front runner for the Democrats. It's Hillary Clinton. Does she win in a landslide only because he's so divisive and there's so many people? There's plenty of people who do support him, but there's so many more who do not. Is that a landslide victory for Hillary Clinton if it happens today?
Well, I will answer that question with the caveat that I've been wrong at
all
every
right.
turn.
All right.
So no, I don't think it's a landslide. I think he has this new campaign manager and someone who is supposedly reining him in and keeping him on message. And if he is able to do that for a long enough time, as we get closer to November, he could still be, you know, a huge factor, obviously. I just happen to think that most elections are decided by those independent kind of swing voters who go back and forth, and they are going to be more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton. We haven't talked about it for a while, but being the first woman, mm-hmm. that is going to be that's going to be big. And even conservative writers and columnists have acknowledged that.
But when you say big in which way? Is it the novelty of having a woman potentially be the president, or how big in what way?
Yes, yeah. Big in that way, that you have a woman this close to the White House, just like Barack Obama. There were a lot of people who put a lot of faith in him, but also wanted to be alive, wanted to participate in the first black president.
Yeah.
That same factor, I think, will be for Hillary.
And who was it who said, you know, shame on you for not wanting to vote for Hillary? You should. Who was it?
Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, that... What did she say? Shame on women who don't support women. It was a more strongly worded than that. But yes.
Don't you believe that women are going to vote for Hillary just because of that? Not even necessarily what she stands for? Because I want a female president. I want the first woman president. Don't know that she's the right one to be the first female president, but we should have one.
Right. No, I do think there's a big swath of the population that will kind of scoot over to her. Not just women, but... She it's not like she's a woman and she's not qualified or something.
Right.
She kind
Definitely.
Of is the full package. And unless you have like this visceral reaction to her, I think she will get a lot of votes. I don't have a visceral reaction to her. She's not my favorite either. But and she doesn't poll well. I mean, if you look, her negatives are always really high. But again, we're going to be kind of pivoting to a general election here, and she's doing really well. I don't know if you watched the speeches last night. I only watched parts of them, the victory speeches of Trump and Clinton. But I kind of felt for the first time a little of that fever, like, here we go. Here are the nominees. We're taking off and going forward. There's not a lot of still talk of what's going to happen at the convention necessarily. And it just feels like the beginning to me.
All right. Let's examine a little bit more of that in just a little bit. If you have a question or a comment, 312-981-7200. That's our call line and our text line. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Kristen McQuarrie from the Tribune on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking politics with her. All right, so if everything goes according to plan, you have Donald Trump and you have Hillary Clinton and they're running against each other, those debates are going to be tricky for him because his perception is that he's not kind to women. His run-ins with Carly Fiorina during the Republican debates were not his best moments. What does he do differently when he's debating Hillary Clinton to make himself look better?
How about learn some stuff?
I'll
like,
go with that.
Let's start with, you know, as soon as this is kind of wrapped up and he can hit the pause button, getting into a room and doing some of the due diligence that all candidates do on foreign policy. And so he can't get away with just these broad, we're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it types of statements. His one advantage will be that Hillary Clinton is probably one of the most messaged and careful candidates that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost frustrating. You can't get her off message. It's like everything she says feels like it's been poll tested. And so against someone like Donald Trump, who kind of can relate more to everyday people and they sort of feel like he at least speaks like an actual human being, he could do okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember... it seems like every election cycle, somebody tries to get that zinger question, like name the president of Egypt, you know, and you know, Donald Trump is going to have a lot of stumbling around, I think, if it turns out.
So what normally happens is, as they go into debate season, they're constantly peppered with questions like the one you just mentioned, just to say, these are going to come up. You have to know these things. If you want to be the president or the vice president, that's the story about Sarah Palin is, They were constantly trying to groom her and say, these are our friends, these are our enemies, you have to know the difference, you have to know what country's on our side and which we're fighting against, and she couldn't do it. So is he savvy enough to learn that in a short span of time?
I don't think so. And he has in the past said, he's gotten away with saying, I'll just surround myself with people who do know. And that might be the better answer, because I always felt like when Sarah Palin was talking, I could see her in the mirror saying over and over again, Ahmadinejad,
yeah.
Ahmadinejad,
yeah.
You know, like rehearsing what right. She was going to say. And that's inauthentic and people will pick up on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What's next? So the big day in New York yesterday, what's next?
April 26th is Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. So another big, big, big delegate pickup for whoever is successful. And those are seen as, so far, pro-Trump states, pro-Clinton states. And beyond that, May 3rd is Indiana. I'm interested in that because they're our neighbor.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know... Wisconsin has kind of that Midwest sensibility where they went for Cruz and it was a big smack for Donald Trump. So will Indiana do the same? What's interesting going into this next round is that you always have momentum from big wins. And so now you have Trump and Clinton really looking like they're going to clinch it. And now you're seeing stories where people are saying he doesn't actually have to get to 1237, Trump, the delegate number. As long as he gets close enough to it, they won't be able to do any sort of tricks to try to, you know, have Cruz become the nominee. If he gets close enough, that will have to be good enough.
If you had to guess as to who the vice presidential candidate would be on both sides, what would your guess be?
Oh, you know, I used to say Nikki Haley or some of these other governors who are, you know, female and very accomplished, but Trump has, like, angered all of them.
Yeah.
So I really don't know on the Trump side. And for Clinton, she's going to have – this has probably been figured out for 20 years, who is the best running mate for her geographically. And I don't really have a good sense for who that is yet.
Hasn't Trump said on more than one occasion, there are people that I would like to select as my vice presidential running mate, but they don't want to be my running mate? You know, he's mentioned a couple of names. Marco Rubio is one. He said, I would love to have him as a running mate, but I don't think he likes me. I don't think he would want to do it.
Right. I mean, so he was so polarizing during that whole primary. I mean, he is Chris Christie. He's got Chris Christie. And then one interesting thing last night, if you watched his acceptance speech, was there was this guy standing behind him. And his name is Carl Paladino, and he was a Tea Party guy who ran for governor of New York, and but lost to Cuomo in the general election. But just the fact that he was standing behind Trump was kind of a reminder that if you think Trump is going to go a little bit in a moderate direction, here's this very radical right Tea Party guy standing right behind me as I accept this victory speech. So,
if Trump took Vladimir Putin, would people be shocked by that or not shocked by that?
They're the same person, right? It's like,
no, Putin's got a better physique.
Yeah. He does. That's true. We don't want to see Trump shirtless.
No.
Oh, God.
Not anytime soon. Thank you, Kristen. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kristen McQuarrie of the Chicago Tribune. A quick break and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Sweet Jesus, one toll over the line. Sitting
downtown in a railway station, one toll over the line. Can I admit something to you, Bill?
Go ahead.
Back when this song came out in 1971, I had no idea that it had anything to do with weed.
Yeah.
I knew every word.
It says one toke over the line, though.
I didn't toke back then.
You didn't, but you knew what that meant, didn't you?
I don't think I did.
All right.
One of the guys who wrote this song, Michael Brewer, on the line with us of Brewer and Shipley fame. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Bill and Wendy.
Michael, you fooled Wendy. She just figured it out today. You fooled her for decades.
Well, I still don't know what it took me.
Good for you.
I seriously did not. I was not a pot smoker back then. That was a little before my time. And I didn't know what a toke was. And it was a nice harmony, lovely song. And, you know, AM radio back then, this is a top 10 hit. Mm-hmm. You heard every song. You knew every word to every song. And I sang along and loved it. And now we're celebrating 45 years of One Toke Over the Line. And is it true that it really kind of happened in the back room at one of your gigs at a coffee house in Kansas City?
Yeah, it really did. We were, it was a little coffee house we'd played numerous times, and we were getting ready to go on for our last set of the evening, and a friend stopped by with a little something-something, and we stepped out back for a minute, and when we came back in, we were in the dressing room tuning up, and Tom said, "Whew, man, I'm one toke over the line." And I just cracked up. I thought it was hysterical. And right off the top of my head, I started singing, "One Toke Over the Line, Sweet Jesus." And the next day, we thought, what was that we were messing with last night? And we turned it into a song in no time, literally just entertaining ourselves and to write something to make our friends laugh. We didn't even take it seriously. And we were traveling the country and doing shows while we were also flying back and forth to San Francisco, recording an album called Tarkio. And one of the shows we did, we opened for Melanie at Carnegie Hall.
Melanie.
I just love.
Yeah, you remember Melanie?
Yeah.
I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new key.
Yeah. She had a brand new pair of roller skates at the time, as I recall.
And she hooked up with you with your new weed.
Got multiple encores and basically ran out of songs. So we thought, well, let's do One Toke. And we did. And everybody loved it, and the president of the record company we were with at the time came backstage and said, "Oh, you got to record that. You got to add that to the album," which kind of surprised us because, like I said, we really didn't even take it seriously. So he said, well, okay, so we recorded it. And next thing you know, they released it as a single, and it's shooting up the charts, and we were in big trouble with the Nixon administration.
Yeah, explain that a little bit. Richard Nixon was not happy with you guys.
Well, it was he had the FCC threatening radio stations at the time with their licenses if they didn't censor so-called drug lyrics in rock and roll. And we thought that was ludicrous to us. It was the equivalent of burning books. And, I mean, Puff the Magic Dragon was on the list. It was just a witch hunt. It was ridiculous. And we did. We made his enemies list, and Vice President Spiro Agnew named us personally on national TV one night as subversives to American youth. You know what? You can't buy that kind of publicity. I think it helped it a lot. You know, I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize to your listening audience for ruining so many young lives.
You ruined the country, Michael. You screwed up the whole country.
Our evil song, man. Yep. We're so sorry.
Michael, my guess is, by what you just said, you wore this as something of a badge of courage to have Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew upset with you. That's not the worst thing in the world, is it?
No, we despised him. Oh, I despised Richard Nixon. I didn't think I would dislike any president more than Richard Nixon until George W. Bush came on.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, politics never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah.
All right, despite the fact that you're in trouble from Nixon, how did this song make it on the Lawrence Welk show as sung by a lovely little couple, Gail and Dale?
Gail and Dale, yeah. I have no idea. I guess because it was just a popular song at the time. We were in London and didn't even see it. We didn't believe it. It was like, you got to be kidding me. Lawrence Welk didn't play one song. But he did. And 36 years later, we finally got our hands on a copy of it and got it on YouTube. I think it's closing in on about 1 million hits now. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. We watched it earlier today, and our mouths are still wide open.
It's hysterical. And Lawrence Welk at the end, as you noticed, referred to it as a modern spiritual.
How about that?
Because Sweet Jesus is in it.
Yeah, Sweet Jesus and Mary, I guess. So you thought it was a spiritual. Who knows? Well, I know some of the Lennon brothers who are the sons of the Lennon sisters who are, you know, regulars on the Lawrence Welk show. So they grew up on the set. And I asked him one time, I said, did anybody have a clue what they were doing? And he said, oh, I guarantee you some of the guys in the band did. But Lawrence didn't, and Dale and Gail certainly didn't.
Here's a little of Dale and Gail.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus, one toke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway station.
Yes, they're doing something else in that railway station than other people are doing, I have a feeling.
That is so milquetoast, and it's got to be the straightest, most ridiculous version of the song anybody's ever done.
So this comes up in a coffee house. You're just goofing around because you guys were one toke over the line. It goes on the Tarkio LP as your dude from Buddha Records said, put it on the album. But now, was there another song that you would have rather been famous for instead of One Toke Over the Line?
Well, no, not really, because Tom and I have never been singles artists. We've always been album artists. Every song on every album we've ever recorded is just as important as any other song on the album. We've never thought about singles. You know, we've left that up to the record companies. So, no, we didn't have any choice or, you know, anything for singles. Just it was their choice, and we said, okay, if that's what you want to do, go for it. And who would have guessed that not only would, you know, end up being a big hit, even though it was banned at the time, that all these decades later, the darn thing is still played all over the world. It's in movies, it's on TV, it's in books. The phrase itself has become part of the vernacular. I mean, I've seen so many newspaper articles, you know, with the headline, One Toke Over the Line, that doesn't even have anything to do with weed. It's just a phrase that people know. Well, here's an example. When the new pope was getting ready to move into the Vatican, but the old pope was going to remain there also, Stephen Colbert did a thing one night. He says, folks, for the first time in 700 years, there are going to be two popes in the Vatican. Does that mean we're one pope over the line? One pope over the line.
Very so, nice, you know, Michael.
Yeah, well, you know, we never would have guessed. We take no credit. You know, we just wrote a silly little song, and who would have guessed that it would turn into what it's turned into?
Sure.
Well, congratulations. That's pretty cool. We're talking to Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley fame, who gave us One Toke Over the Line, top 10 hit in 1971. And I want to know if you know where 420 even got its origin.
I've heard various story.
So have we.
Yeah, and today a friend emailed an article from the Huffington Post, and I believe this is probably closest to the truth. It originated at the San Rafael High School in San Rafael, California. I used to think it was UCLA, but it was actually San Rafael High School. A group of people calling themselves the Waldos because they like to congregate by this particular wall. When they'd get out of school at 4:20 is when they would go out by some wall and burn one. And that's
but there's more to it, actually, in Huffington Post. These Waldos heard that a Coast Guard service member stationed nearby
had been
tending a secret pot crop that he could no longer take care of.
Yeah,
so,
and they went looking and never did find it.
But they still met there every day at 4:20, even though they didn't find the stash, they smoked the stash.
Some of those kids still show up there every day, Michael. That's the disconcerting part of that story.
Yeah, I know. Well, old habits are hard to break.
Are you guys still playing together?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Still kicking it around. We took a little break for a few years in 1980 because we were just fried from being on the road for so many years. And Tom wanted to get into some other things anyway he had interest in. He got into videography, and he got really good at it. He started out making these cool little documentaries about characters in the Ozarks where we live. And one thing led to another, and he ended up having his own department at the University of Missouri of Science and Technology. And they were always sending him off to places like Bolivia and the Amazon, shooting videos for the university. And he's retired from that, but he still puts in a couple of days a week at the university, and he has his independent projects. But, yeah, we still tour. We're going back to Alaska next month for a tour we've done about 6 or 7 times, one of our favorites. And talk about times changing. Every show is a fundraiser for state troopers, police, and fire.
Nice.
Every night, you know, I would say, you know, 40 years ago we were afraid of you guys, and now here we are raising money for you. And we have a T-shirt, Brew and Shipley More Tokes for Old Folks.
Very nice.
I can't tell you how strange it is selling those things and signing autographs and having our pictures taken with the cops. It's just wrong.
And you're doing some work with your buddy Dan Fogelberg, too. We all remember him.
I did. While Tom and I had gone our separate ways for a while, I was doing some solo shows, and I ran into Dan in Colorado. He was working on his Innocent Age album at the time, and he invited me to sing a duet with him on a beautiful song called The Reach. And I did, and one thing led to another, and he decided he wanted to produce an album on me, which he did. And so old friends like Linda Ronstadt and J.D. Souther contributed to it. Dan played guitar and banjo and sang with me on some things, wrote a song for me, and rest his soul.
Awesome. Do you ever keep in touch with Melanie? Because I have recently taken voice lessons, and I sing a couple of Melanie's tunes, and I probably owe her some royalties.
No, I never have really encountered Melanie other than that one show, and the weirdest thing happened, too. She asked me to tune her guitar for her.
Oh.
Here she is, top of the charts.
Yeah.
Headlining Carnegie Hall and couldn't tune her own guitar. I thought that was a little strange.
Well, now she's doing some work with Miley Cyrus, so maybe something's missing upstairs in her. I don't know.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's a big incestual world of rock and roll, so maybe sometime you'll run into her.
A while back, Miley was doing some work with, his name just went right out of my head. I've known him for years, the lead singer in the Flaming Lips, Wayne Coyne.
Oh.
They're doing some work with Wayne Coyne.
And I know, sorry. And I love that at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which why aren't you guys in there yet?
Well, I don't know. I don't even know how any of that works. We're in the Missouri Music Hall of Fame and the Kansas Music Hall of Fame.
Maybe you guys aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because you get along with each other. Maybe they don't want that.
That could be it. Yeah, that's very possibly it. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just got an email today from a longtime friend saying, how come you guys aren't in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Don't ask me. I have no idea how any of that works.
Well, we're celebrating 45 years, excuse me, top 10 hit, One Toke Over the Line. And before we let you go, Michael, there's a listener who's been hanging on since before you were even on the line with us. Rick, you saw Brewer and Shipley live in action?
Yes. How you doing, Mike? Mr. Hi. Brewer, I saw you guys. As a matter of fact, either you played or you may have emceed. This was back in, I want to say, the 80s. Do you remember way up in northern Wisconsin on an Indian reservation, the Great Northern Bluegrass Festival?
I kind of do. There's something about that ringing a bell.
Yeah, it was like a big arena out in the middle of nowhere, and the stage was all wood, and they had all the people would be down in the bowl in the middle, and they had bonfires going and fireworks. It was pretty much anything went up there because it was an Indian reservation. Only federal marshals had jurisdiction on that land, and it was always like a four-day-long festival. It was nuts.
And sounds like fun.
I think you guys emceed it, if I remember.
We may have. You know what? There's something ringing a bell with me about that. But you know what? If it wasn't for acid flashbacks, I'd have no memory at all.
This is so awesome to talk to you, though. I appreciate it. I really love you guys, man. I didn't know you did any work with Dan Fogelberg. I loved that guy, too, back in the day. That was some good music back then, wasn't there?
Yeah, he was a great guy. One more person gone. I'll tell you, we've lost way too many contemporaries recently.
How about it?
The Eagles. No kidding.
It's been a very bad year.
Really bad year. I have an old Polaroid snapshot of Paul Kantner. Of course, you know, founding member of the Jefferson Airplane, yep. Jefferson Starship, in the early 60s at an apartment in Venice Beach, California, ironing clothes, wearing a white button-down collar shirt, horn-rimmed glasses, and a flat-top haircut when he was a banjo player in a folk group.
Wow.
That's a pretty cool picture.
It was very few years later that, you know, they were on the top of the charts, the airplane on top of the charts. And one night backstage at the Fillmore West, he turned me on to my very first tie stick.
Oh, that's great. Happy 420.
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael.
Burn one for Paul and for Glenn later today.
So nice to talk to you, sir. And say hi to Tom Shipley for us, will you?
I'll sure do it. It's been a pleasure speaking to you folks, too.
Thank you, Michael. Michael Brewer of Brewer and Shipley. Explaining a song from nearly a half a century ago. It's
45 years ago and still being played on the radio. And
yeah.
He was on the Dick Cavett Show Midnight Special. Remember that? And of
course, Bert Sugarman's Midnight Special.
And Don Kirshner's Rock Concert.
Yep.
Love that as well.
Yep. All right, a quick break and then more show for you. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
What they've done to my song, Mom.
Remember this song?
I do remember this
Look
song.
Look what they've done to my song.
It's a Melanie song.
Well, it's
yeah.
The only thing
right.
I could do at
it's not
night.
Melanie singing.
It's turning out.
Now, I know who this is, so it's unfair of me to say. But it is Miley Cyrus. Song.
God, I love her voice. Here's Melanie singing. Loved Melanie.
A lot of Bob Dylan-y influence there. You hear it, right?
Well, it was a folk era. It was, yeah. You know, folk musicians, and Melanie hooked up with Miley Cyrus for her backyard series, Happy Hippie, and it's a charity project to help fight for homeless LGBT youth, and you can donate. You can go to Melanie's homepage, which I didn't know her last name was Safka.
Mm-hmm.
So Melanie Safka, SAFKA.com, and you can help them for her Happy Hippie charity project, helping to fight for homeless LGBT youth.
That song was immensely popular for a span of time. I remember hearing it on the radio almost every day for quite a long time.
And Brand New Key, I got a brand new pair of roller skates. That's
yeah.
The one I cover when I sing.
Oh, you do?
Although I don't really sing anywhere in public.
Oh.
Just in my basement.
Oh.
I'll record it for you sometime.
All right.
Should we take... I forgot they speak French in this song, too.
Oh, play the French part.
You speak French?
Yeah, I do. Only when I hear it in singing form, though. Like, if you just speak it to me, I won't get it. But in song, I can understand it.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, quick break. Shall we say hi to Ro and Anna? I wonder how Ro is doing.
Oh, after last night's loss? We'll find out. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.